This episode of Rob Has a Podcast, talking about the 35th best season of Survivor, as voted by the fans of Rob Has a Podcast, is sponsored by our friends over at BetterHelp Online Counseling. If you're having trouble meeting your goals or difficulty with relationships or trouble sleeping, if you're feeling stressed or depressed, BetterHelp is available. BetterHelp offers online professional counselors who can listen and help. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help assess your needs, and BetterHelp will match you up with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's secure online professional counseling. BetterHelp counselors have a broad range of expertise, which may not be available in your area. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send unlimited messages to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, and everything you share is confidential. You won't ever have to sit in an awkward waiting room again. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so it's easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they recruited additional counselors in all 50 states. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Rob as a Podcast listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/RHAP. That's BetterHelp.com/RHAP, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced BetterHelp professional. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's ready to wish a happy damn birthday to the 35th best season of Survivor, about to turn six. We are talking about Survivor Worlds Apart. Yes, very excited to visit No Collar, White Collar, Blue Collar, and everything that happened in season 30. It's not just the 30th season of Survivor. It's also the 35th best season of all time. And we're here to talk about tonight. We got a great panel to join us. First, let me welcome back a man that I spoke with all month long in the month of January, when we talked about Kid Nation, which brought together No Collar, White Collar, and Blue Collar kids from all across America, the Bonanza City. Please welcome back the great Phil Thompson. Phil, how are you?
Rob, listen, man. I thought you and me, we're going to be like Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan. But now that I see Jenny's here and she's with the real Phil T, like now I'm feeling like Luke Longley, bro. That's
Luke all Longley. I got to say. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So many sports references from Rodney. And I really did not appreciate that there's still so much Tom Brady. Like, I feel like that really would have been like, oh, Tom Brady, remember him? He's like, really sucks that is still a relevant reference from Rodney.
He's like Mike Tyson at the end, winning this thing, man.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Phil, so excited to have you here to talk some Survivor with us. And we're very excited to have back with us to talk about Survivor Worlds Apart, that we know that she celebrates Libra season. And I don't know if that necessarily makes her No Collar. Please welcome Jenny Autumn. Jenny, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. This is not a collar. It's like so no collar that's almost falling off of me. So I think I'm probably as no collar as it comes.
Full no collar. Okay. Very excited to have you here with us to talk about season 30 of Survivor. We are just getting underway here tonight in our weekly panel discussion. This is the 35th best season. By the end of the show tonight, we'll tell you the 34th best season of Survivor that we'll talk about next week. Later on this weekend, I will be getting together with my old friend Jessica Frey to continue to answer your feedback questions about Survivor Worlds Apart in our Rob is a Podcast patron only feedback show. To listen to that and everything else we're doing, patron family feud and more, check out robiswebsite.com/patron. Of course, we are live. We can take your comments along the way. So excited to get into this. And let me just say up top that I did enjoy my trip back to Worlds Apart. I've actually enjoyed, you know, everything that I've watched for the most part here going back through. This is the sixth season of Survivor I've watched here in 2021. I will say that this is not a new favorite of 2021, but I will say that this is the second best season I watched in 2021. I think it still is not as good as last week's surprising revelation of The Edge of Extinction. Jenny, what do you think?
I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, I haven't fully watched all of the seasons that you have rewatched, but I feel like that is, you know, based on my feelings about everything that has come up so far, I think that it really wasn't as bad as I thought it could be. And actually, I did somewhat recently rewatch the season. I did a little podcast with you a couple years ago.
Yes, I wasn't going to bring that up, Jenny.
Listen, I don't want to ever associated as the Joe specialist or the Joe correspondent, Joe Anglim correspondent of RHAP. So yes. Let me just get that out in front. But I did do a preview podcast with you a couple of years ago, right before he was going to be a returnee on Edge of Extinction. So I had to rewatch the podcast or rewatch the season then, and I was lower on it. And now I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected. I'm higher on it than I was on the first and second rewatch.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
Phil, tell me about why were you so high on Worlds Apart to come on and want to talk about it with us?
Well, Survivor Worlds Apart was the first season I decided I wanted to be all in on, you know, Survivor Twitter, Survivor Reddit. I have my first RHAP season. So I came into that season with like a really high expectation and I was all in. I just wanted to read all the bios and everything like that. So I feel like I had that kind of bias, like at the jump when I first watched the season. But rewatching the season, I'm not so high on it anymore. Like, you know, I agree with you guys that it is still entertaining. Like, there's not that many parts that's like a slog, but yeah. There's just a lot of insufferable parts that don't really work together that it's not that fun to watch, I would say.
Yeah, I would just say my quick review of the season after watching it in the last couple of days was I felt like it's a really fun premiere of the show. I think it's actually one of the best premieres. You get to meet everybody. It's 90 minutes, lots of great character moments there. But then from there, I do feel like that most of the pre-merge is kind of a slog. You get into a lot of stuff about Mike versus Rodney working at the blue collar camp. There's a lot of just bickering that goes on at the white collar. And then no collar is a no fun tribe of everything with, you know, other than I will say, you know, some of the Vince, Joe, Jen love triangle is chef's kiss. That's great. But that's done after the second episode. And you spend, you know, a couple other episodes dealing with the three tribe format. I think then you get one really good episode before you get to the merge where that the blue collar, basically like the super tribe, is going to throw a challenge and there's an interesting vote. But then I actually thought that the whole like strategy at the merge, like I think is a lot of interesting moving parts in terms of like, you know, everybody's kind of focused on Joe. But then there's like this other thing that ends up coming up where people are trying to work against Mike and everything with the auction. And there's a couple episodes of intrigue around that. And then I think by the end, it does get a little repetitive of Mike wins immunity. So overall, I did think it's an interesting game. There are a lot of funny moments, but then also there's a lot of stuff that is tough to get through. Specifically, the stuff with Shireen and Will is, you know, not fun or short. Like it goes on over a number of episodes where it comes up constantly. It seems like it's something that's outside of the game. It does not even seem like it is a game related feud, and they spend a lot of time there. And then also, of course, the women get talked to pretty horribly throughout the course of the season by a number of different offenders over the course of the season. And in the beginning of the season, it's more of a storyline where like the people on screen are talking about it. But then after a while, it just becomes a thing and then doesn't really get talked about until we get to the reunion. So obviously that's not great, but I do think that there was fun to be had here in Survivor Worlds Apart. All right. You know, one of the things that I guess while we're on that subject, one of the things I thought that was interesting, where after watching the whole season, then Jeff opens the reunion show talking about how like, hey, We are going to talk about this, that this is a season where we heard so much chatter on social media about everything that was going on in this season. And we'll talk about it here tonight with Rodney and Will and Dan. And I do think that I do feel like that Survivor, and I don't know exactly the point, maybe when they like had the Survivor Karamoan finale and promoted Cochran on Twitter, where now we've culminated in this season 30 finale where we're actually voting people back in. Like, I do feel like that they kind of like opened up the floodgates of, okay, now we are hearing criticism that is happening online. Jenny, do you think, is that a crazy take?
No, I mean, and Jeff even kind of addresses it during the reunion that this was one of the, you know, the most talked about seasons on social media, with good reason. And, you know, it might be that also that the campaigning for 31 was happening simultaneously. But I think that because of a lot of the issues that were coming up, there was lots to say about it. And it was maybe just kind of, like you said, the turning point of social media's engagement with the show, for good or for better, for worse, really. And you know, what bothered me about the reunion, and I mean, I know we're going kind of backwards here, but like, Jeff really acts like he's going to address it. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, he doesn't realize how many minutes he has because he's got to, you know, announce who made it onto Cambodia. And we yada yada, dealing with Rodney essentially. So,
but we, you know, instead, we'll give him a cake.
A cake. I know. And I have so many issues with that. It's
all right.
Like,
we're out of time to yell at you, but we do have a cake. Can we bring the cake out? Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
you've got a killer bit.
And I don't think that Rodney fully understood that he was being made fun of in this moment. But I did take issue with that I was like, you know, because I forgot about how the reunion went until I was rewatching it. And it was like, Jeff was like, the way the men talk to the women, we're going to get into it. And then like, we get this whole section where we address it with Dan. And then we get a little bit of the Will and Shireen stuff that doesn't really even feel well addressed. And then, oh, Rodney, sorry, I was really going to take you to task on that. But here's a birthday cake. Like, it really did get yada yada'd. And so I think that was, you know, a byproduct of the Cambodia thing. But yeah, I mean, the other thing about the finale is, or the reunion, is that we didn't have to talk to Joe for 10 minutes about how women try to pick him up now. Like, there were so many things that got wasted in that reunion time that I feel like they could have really talked about what was actually being talked about on social media during the season. But instead, it did get kind of brushed under the rug near the end there. So.
Yeah. And with the Dan Foley thing, that, you know, Jeff does, you know, take him to task for a couple of things, like when he's wearing the male escort t-shirt to the finale, which was a choice for sure. I forgot that Jeff called him out about that in the real time. Like, do you think that was a good call, what you did? But then they ended up going to, like, they really took him to task seemingly more for that he killed the show in his exit interviews. Phil, they're like, oh, Dan, you said we took things out of context. Well, how about this? Let's show you exactly what you said you didn't say. And then we spent like 2 minutes watching like a whole clip just to prove like that Dan has a bad memory.
Yeah, it became much less about like what Dan actually said to the women versus what Dan said about production. And Jeff was more like, hey, you said something about me. I mean, who cares what he said about any of the women? But, you know, hey, you said something about the show. And even like when, you know, he's talking about Rodney's mom, not like, we're not referring to anything that, you know, he said to Shireen or he said to, like, you know, anyone else. It was just about Rodney's mom. Like, that's the most important clip you guys could pull. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He called Rodney's mom a not nice name. And then he claims that he's like, I ran into Rodney's mom and she said, I knew exactly what you meant. Like, Rod, really? That was what she said? Why would she say that? That doesn't make any sense. But all right. I guess let's talk more big picture in terms of Survivor Worlds Apart, and we can touch on all these issues as they come up in the conversation. But I guess let's start with this theme of Survivor Worlds Apart. It was sort of like a watered down brains versus brawn versus beauty, where that feels like that they really tried to. Survivor Kagyan was so great. could we recapture the magic here with the three tribe format of a little bit of a different spin of how people view the world? We have a white collar. They're the people that make the rules, Jeff tells us. Blue collar, they're the people that follow the rules. And no collar, they don't live by anybody's rules. Jenny, did the theme of Worlds Apart, considering where we've gone to with healers versus heroes versus hustlers and things of that sort, did this do anything for you now going back?
I mean, the theme was kind of a disaster, and it was really just like hammered into the ground. A lot of the issues I have with it is the clunkiness of it, and that that Jeff was really trying to make the alternative title be blue collar versus white collar versus no collar when the season was called Worlds Apart. And it's like he was constantly like doing this longer version of the name that didn't seem to be official. Mm-hmm. And then apparently learned no lessons from it when we got heroes versus healers versus hustlers, which at least has alliteration. Mm-hmm. This, you know, like trying to call it blue collar versus white collar versus no collar. I don't even remember what the order he was trying to make happen. I hated that so much. The theme itself, like, I guess there is a concept there, but it got so annoying by the end because I don't know in any other season. Again, I'm not a huge rewatcher unless I have a reason to. Mm-hmm. But why are we still talking about pulling your weight around camp and camp life and getting wood on like day 38 of the game? Mm-hmm. There was something about like the blue collar rhetoric of the season that was just so painful. So that it felt like we were going back to like early Survivor where, you know, at the end of the game, it's like, I was a good player if I like put wood on the fire. Mm-hmm. And like we even see it with Sierra at the final five trying to pitch why she should stay because she really wants to be there and is, you know, works really hard and Rodney doesn't. And it's like Jeff literally calls out that that's like a pitch to get rid of you. Why, there was something about the blue collar, you know, thing of the season that it was really, really annoying how working hard at camp was such a like driving force of, about people's feelings about each other. Yeah. So I didn't love that.
Phil, how do you feel about the theme?
I mean, in my mind, I think Jeff Probst gonna Jeff Probst. Like, you know, at this point in the season, at this point in Survivor's history, they kind of just need a general theme just to advertise, to be like, these are how Americans are, and this is how they're all gonna come together. Yeah, Americans. So I kind of didn't care that much about it. You know, it did kind of suck to see some people kind of pigeonholed into these places that they maybe shouldn't be. Like, is Nina really a no caller just because she's deaf? Or, you know, is Will really a no caller because he's a YouTube sensation? But I guess, like, you know, it didn't really matter that much to me because we kind of moved on from it. But although I think you do make a good point, Jenny, that like, you know, a season's theme does actually matter in the end of the day. It does kind of like change the rules of like of the season in a way where you're judged and valued based off of the tribe you're on, you know, like on a brawn beauty tribe. It's like, you know, how do you use your skills as a beauty member? Or, you know, in this, it's like, were you a blue collar worker? Did you represent that? I think it's something that's kind of interesting. Didn't really matter that much as much as Jeff tried to plug it, but whatever.
So I think in hindsight, I don't think I was that mad at it. I felt like at least it was something to be able to sort of like sink your teeth into in the opening. And I was wondering that maybe like, is the idea of white collar, blue collar, no collar even more relevant in considering where we are over the last year because of what we're dealing with this pandemic? Because if you take a look at it, you have the white collar workers who have really, you know, shifted to working from home on Zoom. You have the blue collar workers, which are more of the, you know, people providing, you know, essential services for people out there still working hard, no matter if there's a pandemic or not. And then you have the no collar people who are working hard on Facebook telling you not to take the vaccines.
I thought you were going to go like influencer, like they can't go on trips anymore or they do anyway. And they're flexing their group hangouts.
That's true. They're living their lives still.
I think, you know, the Joe Anglim connection, that made it all the more clearer. I think that makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe we're even more worlds apart now after this last year. So I thought it was at least an interesting way to get into the season. I feel like that they do try to do a lot of stuff to see, like, especially with the dilemma that they do to open the game of, okay, how does this group handle it? How does this group handle it? Where, you know, and it works out so perfectly for the show where, oh, no, it's only the white collar people that are going to attempt to try to pull this off and scam the other people by going with the deceive box, which they do. It's a very fun finale with So premiere with So and Joaquin deciding to go with the deceive box. Jenny, did that work for you? The honesty versus deceive box?
I liked it as a like, you know, day one twist. I like that, you know, people go off and they make a decision together. I really enjoyed, because I remembered, obviously, I obviously know that So goes first and that they don't do a good job of hiding what they did, but I couldn't really quite remember how they sold it, and it was so bad.
They're so bad.
And then the neutral box, like, I totally forgot that neutral box was the thing. So not only they explained there were two boxes, there was the honesty box and then there was the deceit box and then there was just neutral box. And then it was like, as they're telling the story, they can tell that, like, people are like, okay. And then they're like, yeah, but, like, the honesty and the deceit box, they were all gonna have, like, a caveat. So, like, we just had to go with the neutral box. It's like, it was such a terrible explanation. Like, they should have just been honest about their deceit, but I really enjoyed them just, like, stumbling over their words to make up what the scenario was. And I'm grateful that we at least got something from that twist, because I feel like you so easily could have been a nothing. Like, everyone chooses honesty and that's it. But we did get a little bit from, I think at Blue Collar, Sierra calls out that the bag of beans that they brought back was not big enough and that there had to have been. So we did get a little bit from that, even from the, you know, the tribes that did choose the honest box. And so I think that's like a fun, you know, first day twist.
Yeah. Phil, what did you make of Joaquin and So trying to pull the neutral box?
I just want to let you know, Rob, and let you know, Jenny, I'm a big Joaquin stan. I just, something about Joaquin and his D-bag energy, like, whoever casted him deserves a raise, just because, like, when I see Joaquin, I exactly know the type of dude he is. Of course he's going to pick the deceive box. And of course he's like, you know, we gotta be villains. So come on, let's do it, man. I don't know. Yeah. Like, he has such a chill, like, swagger to, like, his villain energy that I really appreciated. And of course, you know, didn't work out at all, but I thought it was great.
Yeah, I feel like that So Kim got a really raw deal here. That I do feel like that she was in the mix for Survivor. I think that if I remember this correctly, she was in the mix for Survivor San Juan del Sur, and then she couldn't play, and I don't remember the exact story. Does anybody remember what the issue was?
Yeah, her sister Doe Kim, I think her name is Doe.
Yes.
Was not medically cleared to, or something happened to her. So yeah, she,
I wasn't sure if she had gotten pregnant or something, or I think there was some issue, and so she didn't play in that season, but then she gets to come back here and then ends up getting sucked into because it's Joaquin who says, hey, let's go with this. But then she's the one who ends up, like, holding the bag in terms of like having to reveal this lie, and Max and Shireen are like, and Carolyn are all like, no way, not buying it.
Yeah, she was really resisting too. Like, there was like some sliminess in the, like, scene where her and Joaquin are at the boxes. He has, like, his arm around her. He's like really trying. Like it felt to me like, you know, like a 60s movie where, like, the guy is trying to convince the girl to, like, hook up or something. Like, it was like, they're like, come on, it'll be so fun. And she's like, I don't know. Like, it was very weird how he had, like, his arm around her, and she definitely seemed like she was thinking that it was a bad idea. But Joaquin is like very persuasive, and he has like that, like he's got that vibe to him, like Phil is saying, that it's you know, it's villainous, but it's very persuasive. And she's like, all right, screw it, let's go with it. And ultimately she does, you know, take the fall for it. But also it is a bit on her because she was the one that took the lead at explaining what happened, and it was not good.
Yeah. Either way, it's a great start to the season. Now, it's a season, though, that I do feel like gets a lot of criticism for the dominance of it. Its winner, Mike, not necessarily from a strategic standpoint, but from the standpoint that he cannot be eliminated. I believe he wins 5 out of the final 6 immunity challenges, and then also has a hidden immunity idol. So there is no point at which that he is able to be voted off, which many people cite as a criticism for why they did not like the season. Phil, how did Mike's dominance in the challenges hold up for you?
I mean, I'm not one to really get mad for someone like just winning or finding idols. Like, you know, like people get mad at the Dree Bergens or the, you know, the Rick Devins of the world. But, you know, if you're able to do it, you know, you're able to do it. And especially Mike being able to actually win the challenges versus like people say like finding idols is rigged. But, you know, Mike won all the challenges. His competition wasn't great, but he still won them. Mm-hmm. And so I think my big problem with it was more so that the edit was so clearly pointed towards, you know, Mike winning the season. There was no way anyone was going to win the season. And even like before the show, Jeff said, like, the winner of this season is going to be the most beloved winner of all time.
So likable. Such a likable winner. You're going to love it so much, he said.
And he's not even that likable. Like, even like, you know, in the pre-merge, he's just like dogging on everybody for not getting wood. You got to work hard. You know, he's just doing his thing. It's like, are you even that likable? I don't know.
Yeah.
I will say I came into, you know, this or left this rewatch with my biggest takeaway from it is Mike Holloway was robbed from Winners at War.
Yeah.
He should have been on the cast. And I think give him Ben Dree Bergen or Nick Wilson's spot. I don't remember liking Mike that much as a winner or as a player during the season. This rewatch, maybe it's because there was no letdown or disappointment. I knew what I was getting. I knew he was going to be winning all of these immunities. But I came away from it being like, you know what? He didn't stop. It's not like he just won immunities and sat back. The weeks or the rounds that he won immunity, he came back from the challenge and was working people and was trying to do stuff to, you know, impact the outcome of the round. Even though in a lot of other scenarios, someone gets the necklace and is like, I don't give a shit. Whoever goes, that's fine. I'm just going to try and win next round. And I came out with a lot of respect for his win, despite it being, you know, very obvious and telegraphed. I mean, we literally have Lindsay telling us numerous times that the winner is on the blue collar drive.
That?
Thanks for the spoilers, Lindsay.
Yeah.
But I really do think that he, you know, definitely not the best winner, and it's not everyone's favorite kind of winner, but winning challenges is a part of the game of Survivor for a reason. If we were only supposed to have social game winners, then there would be no immunity, and every round someone just gets voted out and they figure it out. So the immunity challenges exist for a reason. It's not fun to see the same person win over and over, but I do respect the fact that Mike was also working even when he was safe. So
yeah.
That's my takeaway.
I was really taken with Mike here on my rewatch as well. And I do think that it would have been fun to see Mike play in season 40, because I think that Mike as a character, it's really, they give it to you in the first episode. He sees a scorpion on the ground and he's like, gotta eat a scorpion. Why? But it's like, he sees it. It's like, okay. And then he's doing it, and it's not until he feels sick that he's like, shouldn't have done that. So Mike is, to me, I think that he has a lot more of that Tony Vlachos DNA. And I think that they have a different skill set. I think that Tony is funnier in terms of the, like what he's giving you in confessional, but both of them are just like the motor on these guys. They just go for 39 days straight. And they never stop. And I think that Mike did not have like a Trish there cleaning up his messes that he was making along the way. And he needed that. Unfortunately, he had allies like Dan and people that like were not helping him if he ever made a mess, that he had people that were willing to sort of like pile on and bury him, where Tony had people who were helping him put the pieces back together. But I think that that's that same sort of like impulsive, just pinball bouncing off of everything, like frenetic energy. And I thought that it was very fun to watch. And then I do think that that would have been interesting to see play out on Winners at War, because that you had Ben, who has the similar thing with Mike in terms of finding idols as opposed to winning the challenges. But I do think it's harder to win the challenges. And Nick, not to take anything away from his game, but I feel like that Nick is sort of like a little bit more of a game bot, who was a great avatar for the David versus Goliath theme. But as a character, I think Mike brings more to the table.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that, you know, I'd pick Mike over Ben any day. I think the difference, though, between like Mike and Tony, for example, is that, you know, Tony's making mistakes, correcting them, making mistakes, correcting them.
And I'll say
them.
Tony 1.0. Tony 2.0 played like a perfect game. But Survivor Kageyan Tony made many, many mistakes along the way.
Yeah, but I think that with Mike, he's making mistakes. Like, I think that, you know, defeating or taking out Joe was a big mistake. He should have kept Joe in the game because Joe is a great meat shield. And I think obviously the auction, which we'll get into, was a total mistake. And so Mike really had to rely on winning the challenges at the end of the game, because there was no other way that he was going to stay while, you know, Tony was able to maneuver through the game. However, you know, I still would have loved to see Mike on the season. I think he would have been a blast. And I think he would have been, and he's a better character than even like Ben for me. Yeah.
And not for anything, Jenny, on a season with, you know, problematic characters up the wazoo. I mean, did Mike say a bad word about anybody the whole season?
No, I mean, not that I know of, not that I recall. And
nothing memorable.
So what I, and the funny thing going into this rewatch was, I obviously remembered that this was a theme of the season, the misogyny, the way that the men talked to and about the women, specifically Shireen in a lot of cases, but not just Shireen. And I remembered the obvious perpetrators. I kind of didn't remember that Mike actually, you know, stepped in. And I kind of just remember him not being like one of the main perpetrators of this. And I was really quite impressed with his social game on a rewatch, and how, you know, he really, and I don't think that it was all game for him. I like, he did do a good job of like swooping in and picking up the wounded birds and like, you know, taking care of them. And that did help him, his game at, you know, several points, and that he did have people that were willing to vote with him if he could make something happen. But I do think that it was also genuine from, you know, a human perspective, that he saw the way that people were talking to, you know, Shireen, Sierra.
Yes, and Sierra, too, like earlier.
It. Yeah, that happened early on when they were in the original three tribes. And, you know, he would step in and say, OK, guys, that's enough. Like, you don't need to pile on here. Or like he swoops in and pulls Shireen out of the situation when Will's going at her, and she acknowledges that in her her jury question, that, you know, like that was a really big moment, that he showed compassion and empathy and you know, saved her in that moment. And I think that that got, you know, kind of forgotten because we think about, well, what did Mike do? He, you know, he made some bad decisions early on and then had to win out. But I do think that you see this jury and half of them really like him and really think that he's a good guy with good values, and that he treated them better than everyone else, you know, in the final three. And that's, I do think that plays a factor in his win. I don't think it is purely about his immunity wins, and that people do really consider that he was also a good guy and did have a social game, even if he was messy at times.
Yeah. One of the interesting things I thought about Mike's arc of the season is that I think it really does hold up especially well when you look at it through the prism of, you know, Mike is certainly the hero of this story. But if you really look at it through the foil of Rodney is the villain of the season, and the two of them, when I look at this, Phil, that they start out together on day one, and they are together for 38 days of this game, and they are really at odds almost the entire time. And that's very rare to see in Survivor, where two people are going tip-top toes against each other for so long. Like, we saw it in Heroes vs. Villains with Rob and Russell, and they don't even make it to the merge together. But here they are. They're together. Sometimes they're working together. Sometimes, most of the time, not as much. And if you look at this as sort of like, this is like some big, like, Scar and Mufasa energy here between just these two people who are these basically like brothers in the game, and they are at each other's throats for 38 days.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, and I think that, like, as Mike continues to play the game, by the end, Mike is getting stronger and stronger and stronger every single round, while Rodney is, on the other hand, getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And I think, like, you know, Rodney starts out the game saying, like, oh, I got these numbers. I'm going to play this game with these people. And then, you know, the game gets to his head, and, you know, the lack of food, the starvation, you know, the fact that no one's celebrating his birthday, all that stuff really gets to him. And, you know, I think Mike's really sucking out all his energy and is able to, you know, have him pull out the win at the end. I totally agree.
Yeah, I think that Rodney really does a good job. And I think he outflanks Mike at one point around the middle of the game, where they're sort of like back and forth over like who's in control of the blue collar, and Mike wins that battle. But then they get to the merge, and then Rodney completely outflanks him, and then they have Mike sort of like dead to rights. But Jenny, that Rodney does like run out of gas.
I mean, I feel... it's a slow burn. You watch this like slow deterioration of Rodney. And I honestly, again, talking about how I went into this rewatch, not realizing, how hard it was to watch some of, you know, the things he says and the ways that he acts, but you can really tell that he's just miserable in that second half of the game, especially as soon as he loses one of his people that he was planning on for his. So like, you know, like Kelly goes, and then so that was someone that he had in this like four, it like changed. And it's like, okay, so like, we'll replace Kelly with Tyler, I guess. And so that's the new four that he's got within this group. And then as soon as Mike starts calling out his like his shit, he's like, he really just, I don't know. I can just very much tell that Rodney was battling some demons, and he talks about it in his, you know, his like post-game confessional type thing. But I think that it, like, his head wasn't fully there, and he doesn't do well when things don't go his way. And, you know, each loss that he took to Mike, each, you know, opportunity lost to get him out, he lost the will to go on. And, you know, those rewards, the theme of Rodney winning no rewards is probably one of the best things of the season. It's so funny.
Yes.
But it plays a part. I really think it plays a part in him really not being able to make this happen. And, you know, we're talking about like, okay, well, maybe Mike didn't have like, you know, some formidable opponents when it came to winning these immunities. Rodney is jacked. Like, he had perfect abs on like day 38. Like, I'm sorry. The guy is jacked. And, you know, like, there were other people that could have been winning immunity. Yeah. So I do once again have to bring it back to Mike and say, it's not like he was against like the biggest slubs of the game in the end game. Like, Tyler was there to what, six or something? So
seven. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Carolyn won immunity. Sierra was a threat. Sure.
Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, Rodney just totally just loses control, like, you know, of the game and also of himself. And you really see him just fall apart.
I will say, though, if they gave Rodney a little bit more watermelon, then, you know, it'd have him feel some type of way. He'd be back in on his hustle game. You know, it'd be a wrap out here. I think he'd totally win the season.
Yeah.
If it was on a different island, he would have won, I think.
Yeah, I mean, even that one day Dan Foley brought him like that cantaloupe, and he's like, all right, yeah, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. This is my reward. And it was just very fun to watch with all the rewards, as you mentioned, Jenny. And I have to give Jeff credit here, because I think that this was one of Jeff's best hosting seasons, because he was really on point with a lot of different stuff in terms of like trying to create like animosity among the players, where every time there was a reward, like, Jeff picked up on, oh, okay, Rodney really wants to go on the reward. And he would be like, Rodney. You look upset. He's like, yeah, Jeff, I just thought I was going to get to go on this reward. And then they're like, well, if anybody wants to switch with you, They can do it. Like, Carolyn, would you like to switch with? And like, he like really like put them out there, and that comes up like four or five times. And then there's one point where he asks like Dan Foley about it. And then, Ronnie's like, yeah, that's okay, Dan. I don't need it. And Jeff's like, well, dodged a bullet there, Dan. Okay, you didn't have to do it. Like, it's like Jeff knew what do you, and even like with Will and Shireen, with the whole thing with the letter, like I think that Jeff knew what was going on back at the camp. And when Will comes to Jeff and says, Jeff, you know, I really, you know, I didn't get a chance to bid on my letter. If I sit out this challenge, you know, I'm such an immunity beast, that can I have my letter if I sit out the challenge? And Jeff says, well, if everybody here says it's okay, is there anyone that objects to Will? And then Shireen does the great hand raise.
Such a great
like,
moment.
Ah.
Yeah.
Because like
I think,
to.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, if only you were nice to her. Oh, that's too bad, eh, Will?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like the Jeff of like San Juan del Sur, like if Will asked for like, you know, a letter, Jeff would have just said, go to hell. Like, no, I'm not giving you a letter. But in this, yeah, he's really, really milking it. He knows how to get the right drama out of these people. I think he does a great job.
He was feeling it. I think he was feeling it here in Survivor Worlds Apart.
Yeah, he really seems like he's having fun hosting during the season, and his interactions with everyone at Tribal Council and at, you know, challenges is really, really fun. And like you said, like, I think he definitely knows the dynamics of what's happening beyond what's happening at Tribal Council. And he does really pick at these things, and it carries on into, again, the reunion, where you feel like he's got his finger on the pulse of like what needed to be addressed. And it just kind of doesn't
got away from him there.
Handled,
fumbled the bag on, at the finale. They had a lot to do. For those people who may not remember, at the finale was the second chance vote, which I'm sure we'll talk about. It was interesting to watch that play out. But I do think in the real time, that did take away from a lot of the season, where I think a lot of people kind of tuned out the last couple of weeks of this season because of a lot of the controversy and the backlash to the season. And then people were just so distracted with everything going on with the second chances vote. We have not talked much about Mama C. And Phil, I know a lot of people feel like that Mama C, yeah, baby, was somebody who was maybe should have gotten more attention in the end of the game for being somebody who really battled her way. She did find an idol. She played it correctly. She worked her way more in the alliances than Mike did, who would have gone home at any point if he was not immune. That did you feel like that you saw more from Mama C's game, and should she have gotten more consideration at the final Tribal Council?
Mama C is now an all-time favorite of mine. I had no idea Mama C was this amazing. I'm just a big fan. I had, you know, last time I watched the season, I was just like looking at Rodney and all the, you know, the bad people. But Mama C is great, man. I mean, I'm not saying she's like a top five player, but she's entertaining. She's got everything, and she's cutthroat too. And I think like she cut Tyler at Final Seven. Like, I think that's amazing. And I also just think that, you know, she played her way to the end, because there could have been a universe where Mike would have cut Carolyn at Final Four, but she maintained that relationship with him at the end, just on the off chance that, you know, he was going to win and he could take her. And I think, you know, she made it to the end because of her social bonds. And I think Mama C's awesome. She's kick ass. I love her.
Yeah, baby. Jenny, what do you feel about Mama C?
I mean, I definitely think that she deserved more recognition than she got in the final three. I do still feel like Mike deserved the win. I think that, you know, she kind of almost did what is really hard for her archetype to do. And we see this continue to be an issue in Final Threes, like, you know, and a very similar season that I'm sure will be discussed maybe not too long from now in Triple H with Chrissy, where it's like, you know, the slightly older woman. I don't even want to say older woman, because I don't think either of them were that old when they played. Mm-hmm. But like the mom, and like, but like the colder cutthroat mom. And I think that that's just such a really challenging game to play because of the juxtaposition of being that cold, you know, silent killer, like cutting the throat of her Titus ally, Tyler, and all of these things that she did to get to the end, but also being that type of maternal presence that people seek out when they are playing Survivor, and the kind of person that they expect that mm-hmm. person to be. Like, I think that is, you know, something that is so hard to do and win the game. And we've seen this be continuously a problem. I'm just going to put it out there. She definitely deserved at least one more vote than Will did. I feel like she deserved to be officially second place of this final three. And I wouldn't say she's my favorite player of the season. And I think that for me, it's probably just because I don't personally connect with the colder, like cold-blooded killer type thing. Mm-hmm. It's harder for me to connect with personally. I have a lot of respect for it. And I liked her a lot more in the rewatch than I remembered. I think that she just deserves a little bit more respect on her name overall. I take a little bit of issue with like her, you know, as a woman, not ever stepping in on some of these, you know, problematic things that were taking place. Mm-hmm. And this is the problem with these kinds of situations when they take place on Survivor or Big Brother or any of these games is like, you know, you see something happening and maybe morally outside of the game, that's not something that you would want to allow to go on. Mm-hmm. But you're also in an alliance with that person,
right,
and you can't step in. And so it's really hard. And I really do feel like Carolyn is the kind of person that really probably did have to put her morals aside in a big way, you know, to hold her position in the game. And so while there's part of me that's like, I really would have liked to see her as a woman, mm-hmm. you know, as an older woman on this cast, like step in and take better care of these other women, I also understand the position that it could have put her in the game. And that's why, you know, when these things are happening on Survivor, it's very, very difficult because people will stand by idly mm-hmm. and production's not doing anything. And then, you know, that's my feelings about it.
it's definitely a complicated issue. But for Carolyn, and not to take anything away from Mike's win, you know, it's hard to see anything more she could have done. I mean, Phil, what else did people want to see from her? It's not like that you could say, like, yeah, if she just would have had, you know, added this aspect to her game, that would have been the winning game for Carolyn.
Yeah, I think Jenny already touched on it, which is just that, like, you know, the mom role, or I guess like the older yeah. women are, you know, they have a harder time. And I wonder if, you know, Mama C was like a mm-hmm. younger, like white dude or something like that, if, you know, she would have had a better chance. I'm not sure. I mean, I think Mama C's nuts, but yeah, I don't know if there was much she could do just yeah. because of, you know.
And we've talked about the way that moms get viewed on Survivor, you know, a lot, or, you know, because we've had so many moms who make the final three. And, you know, you have Denise, who ended up winning out there. But then you also have like the Dawns and Chrissy's and other people who get to the end, and Julie, who don't end up doing well. But I do feel like that, you know, when we talk about that, those moms that did not do well, that showed some more emotion out there, that some people feel like that, oh, okay, well, you were so emotional out there, how, you know, you showed weakness, and then I put my trust in you, and then you betrayed me. But Carolyn didn't do any of those things. That I feel like, Jenny, that the mold that we would say, like, well, you know, if you want to succeed as a Survivor mom, this is the formula to follow. I feel like that Carolyn did that to a T.
Oh, absolutely.
That's right. I'm just saying that in terms of what has worked for other people, did not seem to work for Carolyn.
And I don't think that there is really a formula, because it's so dependent on the jury and the relationships that they either built or broke. And that really does end up playing a role. Mm-hmm. But I mean, on paper, she really did do everything right. I do feel like after rewatching the final tribal council, there weren't really a lot of opportunities for her. Like, a lot of the jury just kind of did weird stuff with their questions mm-hmm. and didn't really give her a proper opportunity maybe to say that everything that she could have said. I felt like she did a good job with her answers, but I don't feel like she left it all on the floor. Mm-hmm. And that there were I don't know. I just didn't feel like it was as emotional of a pitch or as strong of a pitch as it could have been. But all of the pieces were there. And if she were the person, if only Mike got voted out, if only she could have beat him in one of those immunity challenges and been the reason that they were able to get rid of him, totally different story.
And from a jury management perspective, I think it's also a testament to what Mike was able to do. You know, he's able to get he makes the bonds with all of the no collar people in Jen and Haley. He's rivals with Joe, but he treats Joe in like a very like respectful way, even in getting him out of the game, that like he sort of like befriends him as somebody that he's trying to target, as opposed to the people that are targeting Mike, who really make him into public enemy number one. So he had those three votes. He ended up, you know, taking Shireen out of the line of fire. That's a fourth vote for him. He apologized to Dan in the final tribal council in a way that really turns Dan around. That's the fifth vote. Maybe you could say that Carolyn could have gotten Tyler's vote also, but Mike also did a really good job with the jury. You know, can I say something about the Mike apology to Dan that I never noticed before? I thought this was like a really fun thing that I found on the rewatch. There's a point earlier in the season where after, and we, Jenny, you mentioned this about how Mike ends up defending Sierra after Sierra got votes at one of the tropicals. They did a vote split. They put two votes on Sierra and two votes on Lindsay. Sierra was upset about getting two votes, and Dan ends up like, well, how do you think I feel? Like, she's like, well, I got my name written down. And then he starts laying into her, and Mike says, you gotta apologize, basically. And then Dan becomes like, you think I don't know how to talk to women? Do you know how many women I've talked to? And they get into this conversation of that Mike says that you need to, she doesn't want to hear an explanation. She wants an apology. And Dan is like, I'm not doing Mike. You think I don't know that? So he does. And then he goes and then gives Sierra an explanation of what he did. And she's like, that is the worst apology I ever heard in my life. And then that sort of like turning it around at that final tribal council, that Mike says, hey, Dan, I just want to say, like, I'm sorry. That's my biggest regret of what I did, that I lost your trust in the game. And then Dan is like, that is finally the first time. Like, he basically, like, the advice that he gave to Dan about how to apologize to Sierra was what, like, which is like the advice of how to apologize to a woman, was ultimately the advice that unlocks Dan and gets the jury vote for Mike.
And the funny thing about Dan's apology to Sierra is the way that he talks about it, like later in the game. He's like, I've been groveling. I was groveling. It's like that is not groveling. Yeah. That was, I did this and this is why. And that's just the way it is. And
he's so dramatic about everything.
So
Dan.
Dramatic.
Yeah. Like
I leave work with calluses on my hand every day.
So I have this theory, and this is only going to be relevant to the 90 Day Fiance viewers, but Dan to me has the drama and like of Andrew. Like, yes. Dan is Andrew, like playing Survivor 30 years later. Mm-hmm. So unnecessarily dramatic and over the top about everything, and the way that he speaks and the intensity of it, and is just like so melodramatic. So rewatching this, I was like, this is Andrew from 90 Day Fiancé. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Hopefully that I'm assuming that Dan is married. Hopefully if Dan's wife is ever detained. Oh, yeah. Have a love story. He just missed the family visit. We didn't get to see her. But then he got the letter from her, but hopefully she's never detained. I guess one of the other big things from the season that is certainly something that we should talk about is the Will and Shireen incident. We touched on it a little bit, but Phil, like, this is just not fun to watch, and it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, for like episodes, like, you know, we think that we made it out of it once, you know, Mike dragged Shireen out of it finally, but you know, Will just continues at the tribal council, and then the next episode, and it's just, it becomes Will's entire edit. Like, I, it just is so frustrating to watch. It's not very fun. You know, some people, you know, the episode's called like Bring in the Popcorn or something like that. Like, some people think it's like entertaining, but for me, like, watching stuff, something like that is not very fun to just watch someone verbally abuse another human being. Like, come on, I don't really want to see that on my TV. I kind of have no time for that whatsoever. It's just unnecessary.
Yeah, and on the rewatch, it does seem like that there is like a feud here going back to the pre-merge, where when Max and Shireen and Carolyn swap, that Will is the person that they target in the pre-merge. It seems like that they feel like, okay, we can work with Jen and Haley, but let's target Will. I don't know if there was any sort of like residual animosity of Will versus Shireen from that point on. But this, you know, just he goes off. And Shireen's not the only person who's saying that maybe there is more food. You know, Jen is there also, but Shireen just becomes the person who gets attacked by this.
I feel like Will is the kind of guy where it's like, he's a good guy and real nice to you until the second you even slightly cross him. Sorry, Will. They say Will. He's the kind of guy that is so nice. And then as soon as you cross him, like, he goes off. And I think, you know, we see this in the Vince vote, where, you know, like, that got so screwed up. Like they were going to get rid of Jen. Like, Will was going to vote with Vince and Nina. And soon as Nina screws up by saying, oh, well, Vince is really concerned that you're a liability. How are you? How is your health? And you can see it in Will's eyes. He's like, what? That bugger. Like, he's and I think that we see this carry on, you know, knowing that he was in the bottom of the no collar tribe after Nina left. And that's why he so quickly flips to anyone who the next person that picks him up and is nice to him. And I think that's what we see happen in this, you know. I'm sure that it's also aided by the fact that everyone's talking shit on Shireen this whole season. It's not the first time her name comes up negatively by somebody. And it does become this kind of cult mentality where it's like, you know, nothing brings people together like hating on another person. Mm-hmm. And it's sad, but it's true. And that's something that brings the, you know, that white collar, blue collar alliance together. Like, God, Shireen is annoying. God, she sucks. And when he finds out that she's one of the three people that was questioning his integrity by hiding, you know, bringing back snacks, but where's the box? And it couldn't have possibly been all that. He just goes off and there's no returning from that. And I think we see glimpses of this part of his character in other parts of the season. So it's very unfortunate the way that he reacts to the situation. And, you know, he literally goes off. He makes it personal. It's very, very ugly. And it does get continued at Tribal Council, which is like, also an issue where it's like, if there was the one blow up at camp, it could be reduced later to like, I'm starving, I was not thinking straight, I really lost my mind, I'm sorry. But like, it, the way that it gets continued and you know, clearly he doesn't properly apologize for quite some time is just really a terrible stain on the season.
I will say he does give a full throated apology at the finale, which Shireen does not accept in the reunion shows. But even watching it again, I feel like that he does give like he doesn't give like a, I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings. Like, he does like really apologize. But Phil, like, there's like a Tribal Council where, you know, Shireen is like listing off like the laundry list of that he said, I have no soul. And he's like, no, well, that's true. That is true. That is true. He said that, no, I have no family. It was like, well, yeah, that's also true.
I think Will thinks he's funnier than he actually is. I think for some reason, because Will thinks he's like a YouTube sensation and because he got cast on Survivor, you know, now he's like, oh, anything I say, you know, people will think it's funny. And, you know, it's not very funny to say something like that. I was doing some research and I saw that Will said on his cast bio that he said the contestant he's most like is Earl, which I would not really say. I think Earl knows the three C's, cool, calm, and collective, a little bit more than Will does. I don't really. Yeah, Will was kind of like just a stain on the season, and I wish he just was removed from it.
He was so likable in the pre-merge, though. Like that was, I knew what was coming, and I was like, oh, like Will is like, you know, he's really nice to Nina. Like, there's the whole issue with, like, you know, Nina and, like, you know, the issue that she was having with bonding with the girls and her issues with communication. Like, you know, like, Will really did seem like a great guy in that first half. But, like, you really, like I said, you really do see, like, something happen in his eyes. And he just kind of, you know, a switch is flipped. And he knows how to go at someone. And the other thing I took issue with that whole situation is just, like, how a lot of the apology from both Dan and Will was that it was kind of like, oh, I had no idea about your past, or like, I didn't realize that, as if that was like a way of like, it wasn't like, I apologize for what I said. It was like, oh, well, I didn't know that. So, so the onus is off of me now because I wasn't aware of this issue that you had. So I didn't love that part either. And I think that that's probably something that Shireen was taking into consideration when having to decide whether she would accept an apology, because it's kind of one of those non-apologies. So it is, like I said, an ugly part of the season.
I like the dead fish fall, though. That was pretty funny.
With the Wilhelm scream, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well done. We'll be right back to talk more about the good and the bad from Survivor Worlds Apart with Jenny and Phil. But first, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor today over at a Monk Pack. Monk Pack makes delicious, nutritious food that you can count on, and you can save 20% off when you use the promo code RHAP at monkpack.com. You know, healthy snacks have a bad reputation. Let's be honest. A lot of them, they don't taste very good. They don't fill you up. And sometimes they don't satisfy your cravings. That's why this episode is sponsored by Monk Pack, that makes snacks that taste like our favorite sugary treats, but only have 1 gram of sugar or less. It's that no collar taste with a white collar. Would it be white collar? I think so, because it would be something smart for people that are on a blue collar schedule. How about that? Monk Pack keto granola bars contain just 1 gram of sugar, 2 grams of net carbs, and they're only 140 calories. They're great for anybody that's following a keto lifestyle, but also the perfect snack for anybody who's trying to eat better or cut back on sugar or carbs without sacrificing taste. For me, I try not to eat a lot of sugary snacks, that I like to have a stash up here like Will Sims. And Monk Pack is a great idea because it's low in calories and only has a couple of grams of carbs. Plus, I'm getting protein as well, and they taste great. Monk Pack keto granola bars have a soft and chewy texture, and they come in delicious flavors like coconut cocoa chip, honey nut, blueberry, almond, vanilla, my personal favorite, peanut butter as well. They're great for a quick breakfast, a snack between Zoom calls, or a late night treat. In addition to being keto friendly, they are also gluten-free, grain-free, plant-based, and non-GMO, with no soy, trans fat, sugar, alcohols, or artificial colors. They taste incredible, and you can't beat the low sugar nutrition or the taste that they provide. And you can go shopping online to avoid another trip to the grocery store by getting Monk Pack delivered right to your door. Try it for yourself, and you'll see. We've got a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com and entering promo code RHAP at checkout. Monk Pack is so confident in their product, it is backed with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange the product or refund your money, whatever you prefer. To get started, go to monkpack.com. That's MUNKPACK.com. Select any product and the promo code RHAP at checkout to save 20% off your purchase. Monk Pack, delicious, nutritious food you can count on. We thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Let's get back to the show. Let's get into the good and the bad. I do have a lot on my good list, and I have a lot on my bad list here for Survivor Worlds Apart, and some of the stuff we've already touched on. But let me go back to something. You know, we were talking about the theme and if it played or not. And one of the things they did in that premiere, which I really liked, and I wish we would have seen more of this, was choices in the challenges. And I do think that we were sort of like trying to explore this idea of, would no collar people versus blue collar people versus no collar people, which I'm pretty sure is not really a thing, no collar. I don't think that's ever been said before this season of Survivor. But would the different tribes try to attempt different strategies in the challenge. And I really like that in the first challenge, they gave them the options of that they could either like untie ropes or unlock keys. And then they ultimately had the point where you could do a 5-piece puzzle, you could do the 10-piece tree puzzle, or you could do the 50-piece puzzle. And I thought that that was an interesting decision that the tribes had to make when they got to that. And then, Phil, it was an exciting end to that finale where the white collar tribe chose the 50-piece puzzle and struggled with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, again, like, using the season's, you know, twist or, mm-hmm. you know, title or whatever does play an effect in, you know, the way that people play and the way that people perceive themselves. And in turn, kind of like the rules of the game in a way. And I think it was a great way to kind of showcase that. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I thought there was some funny business to be had with the white collar tribe and the skinny dipping. Max gets it started. Shireen follows suit. And there is just a really funny moment in the season where Tyler is talking and you don't realize that Shireen is in like the Winnie the Pooh costume of just t-shirt. And they like pull back and then it's like Tyler's reaction to that. I thought that was very funny.
He goes out of his way in like the most extreme way I've ever seen to not look at her, not just like... Mm-hmm. not look at her bottom, not look at her like at all. Like the whole conversation, the editing of the season in as a whole, I think is very good. Like there are a lot of really funny moments. And this is one of them, that scene where they're at the beach and it's, I think it's Tyler, I think Joaquin possibly.
Yeah, Joaquin is there too. Yeah.
Yeah. And Shireen in the Winnie the Pooh. And he's just like, yeah, oh, okay. Like, he's literally moving his head in every direction in such an obvious way. It's so, so funny.
Yeah, I had totally forgotten about that. That was, it was fun.
Joaquin's like, oh, Tyler's married, man. He can't see that. I mean, I can, but, you know, Tyler.
One of the other things I like is the hidden immunity idol is pretty cool, Phil.
Like, just the way...
Yeah, like it was weird. I mean, you would think that it didn't have any sort of functionality, but it was. There's no other season where they have a hidden immunity idol like this, where it was like a spinner. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's like it had like a circle, and then the inside, the middle spins.
Yeah, it was like on an axis, and you could like, you would think you'd play with that all day, like a fidget spinner.
Yeah, yeah, that's the trick. They want you to just be like, oh, I need something to do. I'm going to just play with this all day. It's something to do.
Pull my idol out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you get caught, you're still bored. You're like, I'm pulling up the idol to play with.
Yeah, but it was like that. This was like, oh, well, nobody could ever make a fake one. And I kind of feel like that we don't see a lot of fake idols. And I'm trying to remember because now we're watching these, we're bouncing around through time. But I feel like Bob makes the fake idol in Gabon. And then I feel like we don't really see a solid fake idol until then. Joey Amazing does, we should just call him Joe, that he makes a fake idol here. Yeah. And then I feel like oh, well, no one will believe the fake idols because they we've produced such a cool idol. No one could ever replicate this. And then I feel like that from this point on, now they have to start making the idols crappier so people can make fake ones.
Well, and Joe's fake idol was quite impressive. Mm-hmm. Like I've seen way worse fake idols. I mean, he was a jewelry maker. That was his profession at the time. Don't know what it is now. But I mean, with them not knowing, I mean, of course, Mike knows what his idol looks like, but, you know, I think from where Joe is coming from, the idol that he creates is like really quite impressive. Yeah. Like he had like all the beads from, you know, tree mail or whatever. Yeah. He did quite a good job with it, but yeah, I feel like that is probably the peak of like an impressive, idol. And now the ones going forward sort of just look like the fake one that Joe made.
Mm-hmm. One of the other interesting things about the season is that pairs get targeted very hard. It gets talked about with Max and Shireen and Jen and Haley, and then, you know, Mike and Kelly. And then Tyler and Mama C have to really hide their pair. Phil, I thought that was interesting that this came up. I'm not sure exactly why in this season pairs are targeted so hard. I'm not sure what they've recently seen where, I mean, I guess that there had been a blood versus water season, but they did not see San Juan del Sur before filming this.
Yeah, I guess a lot of that just has to do with the fact that it is a three tribe season. And so, you know, having two people on a tribe of six is really huge. And I think also people probably watched, you know, watch Tony and Trish on Cagayan. Mm. I think that a big part about this season that I found interesting is just we're watching the pendulum shift of Survivor, where the pendulum swing, sorry, where, you know, we see everyone just saw Cagayan. So everyone kind of has this perception of the way that people are playing the game. Everyone watched Tony play fast, 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 hard, hard, hard. And so now I think people are way more perceptive of all these threats. And so that's why I think we kind of got like a, you know, a pagonging, because people are like, all right, if anyone's trying anything, we're going to just cut them. You know what I mean? I think that kind of happened throughout the season where it becomes more of a boring season because they all watch Cagayan. They all watch Tony play. And I think that plays a part in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you think that people were on the lookout for the next Tony?
Yeah, I think so. 100%. I think everyone had Tony on their mind just because that was one of the most iconic seasons ever. And so I think maybe even Worlds Apart had to pay the price for Cagayan to be so great. You know what I mean? This is just like something. It's like Cameron going out early in Big Brother 19. He had to pay the price for Ian Terry. You know what I mean?
Somebody had to. Okay. So there's a, I think, a really interesting vote. I think that the pre-merge can be, is a little boring here, but the vote that happens right before the merge, you end up with that after the swap, it's Mike and Dan and Sierra and Rodney are together. And then they get swapped with Joe and Tyler and Joaquin. And so there is a point where Rodney wants to pull in Joaquin and Mike wants to throw the challenge to protect Kelly that's on the other tribe. And then he also wants to vote out Rodney because he doesn't like the idea of Rodney having this bromance. And I think it actually is a very interesting vote. Jenny, that in the hindsight, this is a very interesting vote where Sierra is the swing vote of whether to keep Joe or Joaquin.
Well, I was making jokes while watching with the other Filthy about how, oh, well, you know, forecasting Sierra, if it was anyone besides Joe, maybe her future husband, maybe she makes a different choice there. But she, that truly is the decision before her that, you know, like, she says it a million times in that swap episode that she does not like these blue collar people that she was, you know, that she was left with. They all like they voted against her. They split the vote between her and Kelly and then her and Lindsay. And then she gets, Joe and Tyler and Joaquin. And she's like, these are the nicest people I've encountered. She's just like, you could be anyone and I will work with you. The issue here is that, you know, instead of it being some sort of alliance between Joe and Tyler and Joaquin and Sierra taking the reins because of Rodney and Joaquin becoming this power duo. Now he's like, oh yeah. So Rodney, you're cool with him. And she's like, no, not really. I really don't like him. And so she doesn't have like an ideal situation with what she thought she might be able to do because Joaquin wants to work with Rodney. So I think that plays a part here that she wasn't going to be able to get rid of one of the people she'd actually like to get rid of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think she has a really interesting story. I feel like that this is the time you see her the most. And I think that that's the time that she pops the most as a character is at this point in the season where she's like, I don't like any of these people that I'm with. And she really considers flipping. But it's very interesting to note this about her character. She's with all these guys that are saying and doing terrible things, but she stays with them.
She has so many opportunities to do something different. And I feel like what she says never
stays
lines
with
up
the
with what
people that are saying that bad stuff.
because it comes up again when they talk about when they merge and they talk about voting out Dan, and she really likes the girls and she can't stand Dan and she still doesn't do it. It's frustrating to watch as someone that was like really rooting for her to be like, no, like stand up and go against these people. But I also think that there's probably a part of Sierra that looks at those people and being like, none of these people are likable. Like these are good people to end up with in a final three scenario. I don't know if Sierra was taking this into consideration, but objectively, that wasn't the worst situation for her because they were keeping her safe and they, you know, she might have had a pretty good chance in a final three scenario because so many other people did treat others badly and she didn't.
I think that's a good take. I think the thing is, though, like, I feel like we would have seen a lot more of that in the edit. And I think that's my big problem with Sierra's character overall is that, you know, we start off, you know, after Lindsay's voted out, she's so burned by the Blues. She just wants to flip on them. And then we're all in on Sierra.
And her and Lindsay are super tight. Like, I totally forgot about, like, that they are sort of like almost like the Jen and Haley of the blue collar tribe.
For sure. Yeah.
But then, you know, once she swaps and she thinks, all right, this is when I'm going to flip, nothing ever really comes of that. And that's kind of the last we see of Sierra after that. It's kind of just like she's in the alliance with Dan or whatever. And that's kind of it. I wish we did get to see more of Sierra being like, I need to take Dan and Rodney to the end because they're the worst and I can absolutely beat them 8-0. But I feel like we never really see that much of it. It's confusing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a point in the post-merge where they're trying to recruit her to vote with, you know, Shireen and Jen and Haley and Joe, and there's, you know, they're saying like, come with us, like vote with the women. Now I don't know, maybe she might have had, you know, maybe like, I think that they might have needed another vote or two, but she flirts with it, but ultimately, you know, does not ever leave that blue collar side.
We lose like a lot of the fire that, like, I forgot that Sierra actually kind of had, like, you know, the scenes in the early blue collar days where, you know, she pipes up against Mike being kind of a hard ass about everyone at camp. And like, we don't really see that fire from her for the rest of the game. I feel like, you know, with Lindsay there, she felt like, okay, as long as Lindsay is here and she's speaking up, like, I feel comfortable, like I can also speak up because like, she's always going to be like the louder, stronger voice, but she also sees things the same way I do. I think often about, you know, what it looks like if they decided to vote out Sierra over Lindsay. I mean, like, there's no way that that goes on much longer, but like Lindsay had a lot, like a lot of fire in her. And I think that that would have been an interesting timeline where they decide to cut Sierra over Lindsay.
Yeah. So Lindsay is actually an interesting character and I totally forgot about her. And she also gets lumped in with the Lindsay that's in the more well-known season of Survivor Kagyan, of that she goes out around the same spot, but she ends up going out on a quit. This Lindsay goes out, but she ends up, she gets into it with all three of the blue collar men. Of she gets it into it with Rodney over some of the things that Rodney is saying about women and how women need to hold themselves to a higher standard than men do. She calls him out for that. She gets into it with Mike about that. Mike is saying that she needs to be working harder around the camp. She says, like, who do you think got all that firewood? Did your God make this fire? And she is no fan of Dan and accuses him of losing his underwear on purpose just as he could have a story.
Lindsay's like the female Mike Tyson out here. I don't know. I think that Lindsay was never
tattoo.
Going to be one to actually, you know, like win the game. But I do think that it would have been so much fun to see her, you know, for some weird reason, make it to the merge, because she would not have had anybody's crap. She would have sided with Joe. I don't know how she would have gotten along with the no callers or whatever, but I think it would have made for exciting TV. Imagine her and Jen being friends. I don't know. Something could happen.
I love it. That's the thing is, like, I could see her and Jen and Haley like becoming a thing because I think that they were similar and that they like, they don't want to take crap from anyone. You see this, like, you know, storyline from Jen where she's just like, she just can't stand anyone and she's happy to say, and she just wants to ruin everyone's plans. Like, I think that she needed another person that had that drive. So, I mean, like, I love the alternate universe where Lindsay and Jen meet.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Do you think that Lindsay ends up marrying a survivor if she ends up staying instead of Sierra?
Oh. She ends up marrying Rodney for sure. Right?
Oh my god!
Okay.
What a disaster!
All right, maybe dodged a bullet. So for Lindsay, also we mentioned that she also has psychic abilities. That she was also able to predict that the winner of the game was on the blue collar tribe, and she doesn't just say that once, Jenny. That is all over her entire time in the game, and they even talk about it after she's gone.
It comes up constantly. She's the first person that says it, but she brings it up even, I think, at the tribal that she gets voted out, where she says, mm-hmm. you know, like,
the winner of this tribe or the game is right here.
Right here. And I'm Lindsay. I didn't appreciate these spoilers mm-hmm. that I didn't know were spoilers at the time.
Yeah.
But it is like kind of a funny, you know, story of her presence in the game, because she does kind of get a little bit forgotten, like you mentioned, but she really does. As much as she did fight with everyone, all the men on that tribe, she was also one of the contributors, I think, of that early, you know, like, blue collar are the best people, and like, we're a family, and even if we're a dysfunctional family, like, one of us is gonna win it. Like, I do think that she also, even though she gets cut before, you know, the swap, she contributed to that, like, mentality that gets carried on throughout the entire game.
Yeah. Just going back to then that vote where it's going to be Joaquin versus Joe. So Mike has to throw the challenge. And we talked about this challenge when I did the panel for Survivor One World recently. And so it comes down to like match point is actually Mike versus Kelly. And Mike is trying to ultimately, you know, throw the challenge to Kelly. But unfortunately, Kelly kind of sucks at this game. And Mike is like trying to tell her, I can't believe nobody heard him. He's like, I'm trying to throw it to you. But he has to try to like get her to get it. And he's like saying like, okay, reverse the bottles. It's just
Mike also can't whisper too. So he's belting it and no one hears.
Yeah.
I was so surprised that no one heard, because I mean, again, this was one of the parts that was a little bit fuzzy in my memory, because I couldn't remember mm-hmm. if it was obvious to the other players that he was trying to throw it.
They don't mention it.
Because after the first round, because there are multiple rounds, because mm-hmm. they're very bad at this. Like he seems so loud. And again, like I, you know, they have got mics and it's being picked up, but it just seems so obvious. And he's like, just listen to what I'm saying. I'm gonna let you have it.
Well, and he's standing there like pointing at, and like Jeff is like, Mike is looking at the curtain for like a Mike's challenge throw. And it's just, the only other time I can think of a situation like this in Survivor history is going back to China when James is trying to throw the gross food challenge against Lunch Lady Denise, and she can't get the buttock egg down, and then eventually James like helps her out and just eats it.
I think, you know, my hot take is that Kelly had a concussion after the blindfold challenge, I think. Because there was no, like, she seemed like really headstrong in the beginning of the game.
And not that concussions are funny, but yeah. So, okay. So it's in that same episode, and I have this in my bad list. They have a reward challenge, right? Or is that an episode? It might be the first part of that.
I think it's the episode before that.
Yeah, you're right. And so they do a blindfold challenge, which I don't love. And then there's like an elevator that you have to pull up with a pulley, and the thing comes down and clocks her across the head. So she gets like a shipping pallet dropped on her head. She's gushing blood from her head,
like through the buff,
all right, we need medical's working on her, take her blindfold off. Could you imagine you're in this game and you're like I feel blood running down my face, like, okay, well, hold on, don't take the blindfold off, we need to
still in a challenge.
Yeah, you're still trying to win a chicken, keep that blindfold off.
And they lose.
They don't even get the chicken. Just pull me out. Just pull me out of the challenge. I quit the challenge.
Put a band, They put a bandage on her and then put her bloody ass blindfold back on her face. Yeah. And they're just like, okay, keep going. Yeah. And if you get lightheaded, let us know. It's like, I don't think she's going to let you know. I think she's probably the kind of person where she's like, yeah, I'm okay. And she's literally gushing blood, that she's just going to keep going until she collapses.
The merciful thing for her was that when they were doing that challenge with the memory, that unlike when it was Tarzan versus Cat and they were eight deep, they kept getting it wrong. Jeff's like, all right, we're going to go down to five items now. Like, we're going to take, you keep getting it wrong, we're going to do less items, which I don't know if they've done this challenge since, but I thought that that was a good move.
It made and it a lot five, funnier.
Yeah.
Five items is not that many to memorize. And the best part was literally every time, like, Mike was just trying to, like, just have her get it. Like, and she wouldn't even get it right first. Like, he was putting them in the wrong spot and, like, kind of just, like, you know, really taking his time. And then she was taking so long that he'd be like, okay, I literally have to lock it in wrong. Like, I'm giving you the opportunity to get it right faster, but you're not even taking that opportunity. It was so funny. And we get a few instances of this from Jeff, like in the challenges, just being like, all right, you guys are so bad at this, I'm gonna have to help you. Like, yeah, so good.
Yeah. We'll come back to that. So we ultimately then get to the merge, and, you know, I think that this was a better sneaky way to do what we talked about in Survivor One World, where that they tried to do, like, they had tried to do reward challenges and not have Jeff there. They did the merge and they didn't have Jeff there. Like, they gave Jeff like a sneaky day off there, that you didn't really miss him. They got a note, here are the buffs. But Phil, make no mistake, they worked a Jeff Probst off day into the schedule.
Yeah, no, that was for sure on his contract for season 30. I don't know. I kind of like Jeff saying, all right, guys, we're merged. I like to see them celebrate. They kind of just walked up to each other and they were like, all right, the game's on. I don't know. I would put that on the bad list.
Well, this was better that they did it this way, as opposed to, like, it wasn't a major thing. It was, but, like, Jeff, like, looked at the calendar, was like, do you need me that day? Could you just give him a note?
What else is he doing? I mean, he's on Nicaragua, right? Like, it's not like he's going home to see his kids or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm. He's watching the tapes to figure out how he's going to tell everyone that they weren't wrongly edited, and that he's
going through all the raw footage,
the camp conversations, so that he can. I mean, definitely better than, like, host your own challenge. Yeah. I do think that, like, of all things, the merge is pretty much like, okay, you're merged, and, like, here's your bucket of food and go enjoy it. So of all places to not have them, that's fine. But really, that is in his contract, where he's like, find the thing that there's the least that I needed to do, and then we'll just find a way to not even have me there. It's fine.
So they all go, they have this feast. And look at what they do to these guys. While they're eating their feast, production comes in and steals their camp, and they come back from the feast and their camp is gone. I would be so angry about this. They don't even make that big of a deal. Like, okay, back to work. Like,
it's like, you know, when the British came to America for the first time, we had to, you know, build America. We had to do it. It's an allegory, you know. I have no idea why they did this. I would have been so pissed.
Well, I think that they
have done that any other time.
I can't, like, think of a time, unless it, like, in Survivor Fiji, I think they did it, where it was like, then they took away the haves versus have nots. Like, they took away the special shelter. I think they had to start over again. But
I'm sure it's such a tease too, where they're like, okay, we're going back to the old blue collar camp. And they're like, oh yeah, like, we had a really nice camp. And then they just, like, come back and they're like, and it's gone. Like, it would be different if, like, okay, you're starting at a new beach. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, I'm probably going to have to build this. Like, no, we just literally took your shit down.
From a production standpoint, I understand why they did that, where it was like, okay, well, let's see how, like, are the white collar people just going to sit back? Like, all right, blue collar, get in here. These are the blueprints that we came up with. Can you put this post in over here? And no collar's like, hey, when are we painting? So I do think that they were hoping for something like that, but we do not get any drama out of them. They say, hey, where'd our camp go?
Okay, yeah. I guess we'll build again.
Put it back together.
That's it. Yeah.
That was it. I thought we get a good version of the hang from a pole immunity challenge, which culminates in Jen getting stung by a bee. That is very like, just like, are you laughing or crying? And she's like, both.
Both.
Which,
yeah, she gets stung by a bee in her crotch.
Yes, I think like, Jeff says, Jen is stung by a bee in a sensitive spot. Which, kudos to her, because I do believe that that earned her the only second ever Freakiest Freak Award from Bryce Isaiah back in 2015.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I love everything about Jen. I think, you know, Jen, I mean, of course, Jen does kind of have the quitting saga later on.
Yeah.
But I do think Jen is such an interesting character where she both is kind of good at the game, like a little bit, but also she doesn't really care that much. Like, she could be there or not be there. It doesn't really matter that much to her. That makes for an exciting character, I'd say. Not the best, but yeah.
She's interesting because she is like, she does have like the Courtney Yates of that she's indifferent to being there. Like, that she, like, doesn't want it that badly. I think that that makes her a fun character to have on the screen. The problem is then when things don't go her way, she's like, I don't even want to be here. You know, it's fun to have the person who doesn't want to be there, who is there and is fighting. Then it gets less fun in her exit.
Yeah.
I think that she did want to be there. I think that she definitely, like, it's not like one of those people that wasn't like taking it seriously from the start, or like, you know, especially in these days of like reality shows where like, oh, you're just looking to make jury so that you can, you know, maximize your Instagram followers when you get out. Like, I don't feel like that was mm-hmm. Jen. And as much as yes, like, when she kind of is just like, I would, you know, if I win immunity, I would pass my necklace to Joe. As much as no one ever wants to see someone give up, especially riding off of like that amazing idol play, which I want to talk about at some point. But I do kind of feel for her because, like, as she says, like, these people suck. And I can see where she's coming from, where it's like, you know, even look at Mike's, you know, like path in this game, where like he literally had to win every single immunity because that alliance was so tight. And I think that Jen sees that. I think that Jen sees like, okay, I played my idol correctly and they've taken Haley out. They're going to take out Joe as soon as they can. And then I'm going to be taken out, and they're really planning to like ride down to the end. And it's like, if she sees a really, really difficult, and it's still very early merge, and I'm not, again, not excusing giving up because I do want to see everyone fight till the end. I also can sort of, as a human, understand where she's coming from, where it's like she's deprived of food. Like, she does not like any of the people that are left. They are not nice. They're not respectful.
They killed her chickens.
They are eating her chickens. And at least what I appreciate about her, her quitting is that instead of just walking away and just leaving, she decides instead that her storyline from here on out is, if I'm going to be here, what I want to do is to just foil everyone's plans. And just she's just kind of like, I don't like these people, and I just want to do whatever I can to mess up their plans. And they obviously would want to keep me over Joe. And is Joe has the capacity to win a lot of immunity challenges and maybe make it further and possibly do what Mike did. She feels like she can't do that, and there's no path for her. So I do mm-hmm. kind of like that part of her story where she's like, okay, I'm not going to just walk away. And Jeff really acknowledges that. He's like, well, you could literally just like do the ultimate no caller thing here and walk away. And she said, no, that would be quitting. But I like that she does try to kind of make it her own.
And I have that as more of a thing in my dislike, that I feel like that Jeff really does try to like do the Stephanie Janoux thing where, oh, like, well, if Joe's in danger tonight, why don't you just quit? And then wouldn't that be helping your friend if you just quit right now? I mean, you could just leave, and that would be the whole tribal council right now if you just left. And she's like, I don't want to do that.
Please.
He's like, but you could theoretically, if you wanted to, do that, right?
I wouldn't judge you if you wanted to just
That would be fine.
We could have Joe.
That's
instead.
A moral victory, isn't it? Wouldn't you be throwing everybody off if you did that? Huh?
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, I remember, I think, listening in Dan's... Dan did a post-season interview one time, and he talked about how... I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know
Not
if we're
going
to trust
yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Yeah, but he did really, really go into the fact that like Jeff was trying to... get Jen off the show.
I mean, he clearly was. I mean, you can't say that he was. It's not like a production secret. Yeah. Like, it's on the page. Yeah. So, what are you going to do? You know, one of the things I forgot to mention in my love list is the Jen, Joe, Vince love triangle. And we have not talked enough about Vince Sly, who's a delight on this show. Don't know what he's up to now, but... It is amazing, the storyline where, you know, that and Jen and Joe isn't really a romantic thing, but like Vince like interprets it that way. And he would seemingly like Jen and Vince to be a romantic thing. And this is a great, cringy, awkward, hilarious episode and a half there with Joe and Jen and Vince.
Yeah, I think Vince makes the premiere ultimately, just because, like, you know, Vince is not like a coach, because Coach actually did do somewhat good socially, I would say, but Vince totally alienated everyone in this tribe. So if we're going to have Vince for one episode, I think he did a great job of just like totally, you know, kind of keeping everyone on their toes and kind of making everyone be like, what show am I on again that I'm on the tribe with this guy? I don't know. He made a lot of fun.
Vince gives us one of the most ridiculous lines I've ever heard. Again, I've had this conversation with Phil about how, like, as a blank, like those sort of confessionals, and like as a coconut vendor, I always seek truth. That's like the most absurd statement. Like, what does that even mean? But I think the reality of the, like, you know, the love triangle or whatever you want to call it with Joe is that ultimately, like, Vince, you know, is used to being like that sexy long haired guy that's like very chill and like, you know, knows how to like connect deeply with women.
Here comes
and
Joe.
He gets that connection with Jen at first and he's feeling great. And then the second he sees Joe being alpha whatsoever, he feels threatened. And even though there's nothing going on between Joe and Jen, and I don't think that is ever a thing at any point, he feels threatened. And I don't even think it's just about Jen. I think he just sees that everyone is like, oh, like Joe is very chill and like really good and handsome and he's got long hair too.
He starts the fire. Right.
Yeah, like he couldn't have anyone that was even close to his archetype, and to the point where you can see that he's trying to like differentiate himself from Joe by saying like Joe's the kind of guy that like needs acknowledgement for like what he's done. And it's like that is literally you. Like that is the problem we're having right now, is that like Joe is doing things and they're acknowledging him for it and you're not getting the acknowledgement, and so you feel bad. Like it was so funny.
Yeah.
Do we think Vince is for real, or do we think he's just you think he's actually like that?
Yes, I do. Because I feel like, I feel like that, you know, Max has talked about how like Vince has like, couch surfed. And I think he really is, like that. I think that Coach plays up like Coach. Like, I think that Coach could like turn it on and turn it off, and you could have like a normal conversation with Coach or Phillip. I think this is Vince. Like, I don't think that there is like a, off switch and then like Vince turns off like coconut vendor Vince.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I'm sure now Vince is not that jealous of Joe anymore. I think Vince is finally, for the first time.
Who knows? You know, I don't want to.
I don't know what Vince is up to. I'm afraid to co-sign anyone at this point.
We don't know. You don't know.
Even the people that we left this season feeling like they weren't a bad guy. It's like,
We don't know. Okay.
We don't know.
Jenny, let's talk about that idol play, because we have the moment where Jen finds the hidden immunity idol because she's upset. She doesn't want them to eat the chickens. She goes out and then she finds the hidden immunity idol. Gave us a great sound clip that we played a lot at the time.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yeah. And she found the idol and she held on to it. And then at the merge, What a great idol play when that the blue collar, they're going to put the votes on Jen. They end up also Mike again. He's doing too much that he's like,
all right, we're going to tell Will that we're going to test him.
He tries to do like the Boston Robin Phillip thing to test because he doesn't trust Will coming from the no collars. And then ultimately plan backfires.
It's so great. I almost forgot that there were like successful idol plays in this season. And it's like, as much as there are a lot of really predictable, you know, like tribal councils because of Mike winning, like this was one of the ones where we actually got an exciting result. Mm-hmm. We got this, this idol play and, you know, someone that was a key cog in, I think, a lot of people's players' games, while not maybe having the biggest edit, and is maybe one of the people that I found more like easy to forget about the season, in Kelly going home. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just such a wonderful moment. You know, seeing like Haley and Jen turn to each other and just be like, all right, let's, you see those Jens popping up. Like, I'm sorry, no matter who you're rooting for, a successful idol play is an exciting moment, and this was a really great tribal council, and especially because like everyone was like not only sad that they lost like an ally, like everyone was sad because like, oh, Kelly was such a great person. So I think that it was like, it was such a great move. I think they put the votes on the right person. And yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. I just add on to that, I remember when I first saw it, it was such an epic moment because this was the most, at this time, was the most votes ever negated by a hidden immunity idol. But and then the season right after that, Kelly Wentworth had like one extra vote. And so that was like a way bigger moment. And I think that totally kind of, you know, stole, you know, the thunder from Jen's immunity idol play, which kind of sucks because, you know, I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was a great moment. And it's like, who cares about Kelly? Like, hell yeah, I love to see Jen win.
I mean, she might have been something. Had she stayed, I think she had the opportunity to be sort of like the, maybe like the Trish to Mike's Tony. And who knows?
Sarah Lucina.
If she goes on to win or goes on to the end, that she could be the person that people feel like, okay, Mike, there were times you were unhinged. Like, Kelly, we're giving you the win. Perhaps, but no, that she was voted out, and then I think we never saw her again.
Well, she was clearly like a part of a lot of people's plans, because I thought it was so interesting how, you know, like Mike felt very, very close to her to the point where he literally threw the challenge to make sure that she was safe on that swap tribe. And then we get to the merge and Rodney is talking about this four with him and Kelly. And then I think was it Will and Carolyn, or was it Will and Tyler? I forget. But like, out of nowhere, he names Kelly as like his one person from blue collar that he's holding on to. And I was like, I didn't even know that was a thing. And I feel like we don't get to see a lot of like how Kelly was so well integrated in that blue collar tribe because, again, she gets like sniped by an idol. But I think that it was such a good person to take out there because like clearly Mike had her and Rodney felt like she was very key in his plans. Yeah. So
she was bad TV, but she seemed like she's like a strong, reliable, no drama. Just the kind of person that you probably want to keep around if you're on a survivor tribe with her. But unfortunately, she goes. And then so we get a little bit of a bump there. I do think that especially the first half of the merge, I thought it was very interesting because you then sort of have like the emergence of Joe as a threat, but at the same time, also Rodney is like you know, a couple steps ahead of Mike at this point in the game because now he's moving the pieces on the chessboard because that he feels like Mike screwed us on that. Like we said, vote for Haley. It was Mike that changed the votes to Jen.
Yeah, I also just think though that going back to what I was saying about the pendulum swing, because, you know, everyone, like the season before, was flip-flopping. It was especially, you know, Tony flip-flop, flip-flop. This season, I feel like a lot of the people were really holding the cards close to their chest. You know, during the first half of the merge, everyone was kind of just like, all right, we're going to just vote out all the no-callers and then Shireen because we have, you know, our six. We have our plan set up. And so it, you know, while they were kind of setting up numbers, it wasn't very fun to kind of just watch everyone, like even Tyler kind of just like, you know, stay the course and not really, you know, deviate from any plans or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that was a lot of my frustration watching the season in real time, where I was like so disappointed when Carolyn and Tyler decided to side with the blue collars and continue to stick to that plan, because, you know, I saw the writing on the wall that the blue collar, despite not liking each other in a lot of ways, were continuing to be so solid. And that was like an unbreakable thing. And again, this goes back to what I was saying about Jen, where like, in a way, I can understand how frustrating it is to see this happening, mm-hmm. and be like, what am I? I'm just sitting here waiting to get voted out. So at least I want to make it fun, and I want to screw up some people's plans. And mm-hmm. if that means like laying my, you know, game on the line for Joe because he has a better chance of doing something, then so be it.
And I do think that the part of the problem with this season is that there was one side that just had a couple of goats that were there, and there were just people like, and the goats didn't know they were goats. They thought they were in good spot. And so you sort of like, I think this was the first season where people really tried to like sort of like build an alliance with a lot of goats in it. Maybe you could say Rob was doing that with Philip and with Natalie, but you had that Will ends up being a real goat, I think, after the whole thing with Shireen. And then you have Dan, who's kind of like an obvious goat, it's debatable at some point, like towards the end of the game, do people feel like does Rodney take the whole birthday thing too far, where people are looking at Rodney as a goat? And, you know, how many votes could Sierra have gotten? And so it's just an alliance that's very goaty. And then so people are like, well, why do I want to like go away from this and go with people that might have a better shot to win in the end?
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like the season. It's like Rob, like, you know, leading a bunch of goats, or like Kim leading a bunch of goats. But here there's no real like head of the line leader. You know what I mean? It's just mm-hmm. like, you know, the blind leading the blind, you know, it's just like, what are we doing here? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. So we get the puzzle challenge. Dan is wrong again. That's always fun to see that play out. Love all that.
Dan is wrong again.
But this is like okay. the sort of like the height of Joe mania during this season, where Joe is also like winning. He's winning the individual immunity. He wins a reward, and he gets a clue to the idol. And then he ends up, I thought this was like a choking hazard, Jenny, that he like has like a bottle of like Mountain Dew or Sierra Dawn Thomas Mist. And he ends up like chugging it. And then like the clue like goes into his mouth, and Tyler sees it, and they work together. But Mike Holloway, again, this is, you know, shades of Tony. He like spots Tyler and Joe slipping off. Jenny, I think that Mike Holloway is owed some royalties by Tony Vlachos. Does Mike invent the spy nest?
Yes! I put this in my notes. I was like, oh my God, he is in the tree watching this conversation between Joe and Tyler. I was like, Mike did it first. He literally did it first.
But Tony's better at branding.
He is. I will give him that. It was incredible. That whole episode is so fun. The whole dynamic between Joe knowing that Tyler sees him, swallow the clue. And they have like a really cute little, exchange where he was just like, oh, you finished that soda. And Joe's like, oh, it's pretty warm, you wouldn't like it. And he's like, oh, well, we'll have to talk about that later. Like, it is a really funny moment. And then, we see Mike pull out again. I think that these things sort of get forgotten, because we focus so much on Mike's immunity wins, but like, he does work to figure out what's going on, where this immunity idol is hidden. And even before he manages to find it, puts all of the spotlight on Joe so that he can, you know, make everyone think that Joe found it, mm-hmm. and also make Joe think that he, you know, saw him or assumes that he found it. And so that maybe Joe can kind of kind of like, you know, pull back on the search, which opens the door up for him to eventually find it. Like, yeah. I really think that's such an underrated moment of the season.
Yeah. This is Mike at the height of his strategic powers, I think, in the game also.
For sure.
Does a really great job with all that. Ultimately, Haley and Joe end up going out. Anything else to say about the, like, in terms of this part of the game? Because I think we have a lot to talk about when unpacking the auction.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say Haley is such a fascinating character. I wish Haley did a lot better in Game Changers, because I think Haley kind of does have a lot of good elements here. I think, you know, looking at who was kind of running No Caller, Haley didn't have a lot of the confessionals to be like, I'm running the game. But I feel like looking at the board there, she probably had a lot of the social hold of what was going on. And, you know, she has a lot of untapped potential. She's also just hilarious, but I would love to see Haley a third time. I wish she did a lot better on Game Changers, because she's kind of like, you know, she's cool. The way she talks to you, you love her. She's great.
Yeah. She's a fun character. And I know that she described, she went on a reward and she said, the bread is so good. It's like better than, you know, my firstborn kid. But I do think that she did recently, in the last couple of years, have a baby. So we'll have to follow up with her to see which is better.
If that's still true.
Yes.
She's a bright spot in the season. And I mean, you know, sometimes you have to search for that in these, where you're like, okay, I mean, this cast is very memorable. Big personalities and some big characters, for better or worse. Yeah. And I think that Haley is so underrated, and you really don't see her, how funny she is in like a first watch. And I think like on a second watch or a third watch, you're really picking out like her funny moments. And I think her and also Tyler are people that like you don't truly see from their confessionals, like their full personality, because compared to everything else that's going on, it's not quite there. But I really enjoyed Haley, and you know, she got a little robbed there. Yep. There,
so. We might get to talk about her again soon.
Okay.
We'll see.
Spoilers.
Okay. So that's speculation on my part.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
No, I would also just say, just adding on, if we're going to just finish off the story of the early pre-merge, I mean, early post-merge pagonging, this is just, once again, proof that the three tribe format does not mean that there's not going to be a pagonging, just because, you know, it doesn't mean anything. Like, well, they could still just knock out the no callers and we'll still have a boring time. Like, you know, maybe you should go back to the two tribe. I know everyone was already saying that before, but yeah, I just wanted to.
Okay, let's get into the whole saga at the final Survivor auction that we've ever had in the history of the show, because I think there's a lot of interesting stuff here. Coming into this, we see Rodney finally, like, he has the pieces again to be able to, okay, we want to take out Mike, okay? We don't like what he's up to. But, of course, Mike, again, very much like Tony, he's spying on them. He overhears it. He knows what's up. And so we open the show with the auction. And, you know, we have a couple people that are getting this food. Jeff gets to, you know, we see that people are really holding back for the advantage. Jeff gets to the letters. Shireen does, I guess, what Survivor will cite as breaking the auction, where it has not come back through the entire rest of the 30s, 10 seasons and counting, with no auction. Shireen says, hey, if we only bid $20, Jeff has to then sell the letters to us for the same price that everybody pays. And that way, then we can all get a letter and everybody can still all have the same money for the advantage. To which I would say, if I was Jeff, like, I don't have to. Like, I feel like, wouldn't just that one comment then undo this, like, loophole of the auction?
I feel like this is the era where Jeff is still kind of enamored with the Survivor super fan. He still kind of likes that people, you know, love the show. Now I feel like Jeff doesn't really care as much. But before, he's like, oh, wow, you know the show, huh? Like, yeah, that's great. But he should have just been like,
reward
no.
You. Yeah.
I don't think the auction is broken.
Well, we've seen him we've seen him change the rule or like just decide on the fly in all of these situations where these like negotiations get like raised in front of him, where he's like, that's not a set in stone rule. Like, he easily could have said that, but I think that he saw that like, okay, well, this is like an interesting thing. Yeah. And also I think before this happened, and again, who knows with the edit, I think that it was already acknowledged that some people there were not going to bid on food. So yeah. I mean, maybe I'm giving Jeff too much credit, but maybe Jeff is thinking there like, okay, yeah, maybe some people will do it, but maybe not everyone's going to do it. And someone
with the letter
for the, yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So no, I will also give Jeff credit. Maybe like his producing Spidey sense was like, okay, sure. Yeah. Everybody could do $20 for a letter. And then maybe he kind of had an inkling. Okay, well, what if somebody doesn't? Maybe that would have been something. Like, he maybe had a suspicion that what ultimately was going to happen was on the table potentially, because we have this really great moment where then everybody's going to get up and Mike like has Dan go ahead of him. He's like, okay, after you, I'm not going to. And then everybody gets their letters, and then Mike just walks back, and then he didn't do it. He didn't do it.
It was such a cutthroat, badass move. I just wish he followed through on it. Of course, like, that's the one thing. Like, you can't have your cake and eat it too. But
yeah,
that was such an exciting, like, just before the opening credits moment of like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Yo, Mike is a badass for this.
But then when Carolyn was like, well, then I don't want my letter. And then Jeff is like, yeah. Jeff's like ready to give her the money back. Like, no. Hey, these purchases are final, Jeff. What are you doing?
Well, and the other thing that gets like ultimately gets Mike into a lot of trouble is that like, as they're going up, like, Mike makes Dan go before him. He's like, and then he assures him, he's like, I'm doing it. I just let you go first. Mm-hmm. And like, to ultimately just be like, just kidding. Peace. And walks away.
Psych!
So I like, and that's, and he talks about it and, you know, eventually later, and that like, he doesn't regret the move that he was about to make. He regrets like making a promise and saying like, oh, I wouldn't do that. And then, mm-hmm. not even fully going through with the move.
Yeah.
But it is like a really great moment. And Carolyn's like, okay, then I'm not taking my letter.
Yeah.
If this is how we're going to play it.
And this auction really is like the inciting incident for then the whole rest of the season of that. It's everybody versus Mike from here on out. And all this drama comes out of this. We'll talk about Will and the chest of food, but I just want to reiterate this. I think we talked about this during the One World panel, because they had an auction as well, which was very fun. That I just think that this is a very simple fix for the auction. Look, if you want to keep the letters, keep the letters. Just get the advantages out of the auction. This is simple.
Mm-hmm. I just think at this point in Survivor, like, you know, it's Jeff and all the producers, they're just so into the game, the advantages, all that kind of stuff. Like, watching people eat food to in their head is probably just irrelevant television, yes. Even though we want to watch hungry people eat food. Like, that's fun, but yeah. It's not fun to them anymore.
And I understand the thinking that they're TV producers, and like, but what are the stakes here? But sometimes I think that part of the fun of Survivor is that it's something that's just fun to watch these people, like, how much are they willing to bid on crazy stuff? And maybe they'll fight over, hey, I was the one that wanted that banana split.
Well, the other thing that they could be doing if they want to not simply just be food or like letters from home, let's say, is, and I know that they do this in some seasons, is just keep everything completely covered so that people don't know.
Well, that's what Jeff was, back in Survivor, the Amazon, that we came in and we were going to collude at the auction. And we're like, all right, look, if somebody really wants something like, that Heidi's something that Heidi really wants, just let her have it. We'll all get to eat more. Just, let's all collude here. And then like the first thing was like a piece of cake. And Heidi was like $20, and then the no takers going once, and Jeff was like, that's it. We're every single item is going to be covered unless you start bidding on this auction. Like, all right, geez. Well,
they could have done that because we see Will vote on or bid on the very first item that's covered and has no idea what it is. Ultimately, bids on, voting himself out of the auction, and he gets a kind of a surprise when he gets back to camp in that, you know, there, it wasn't completely nothing that he got. And like, why not do something like that? Like, there is obviously always an element of chance, especially with immunity idols. It's like, if you want there to be an advantage, don't announce when something is an advantage. Don't announce when something is letters. Like, leave it all up to, you know, it to be like kind of a gamble when you decide. You're like, you know what? We just had two food like things in a row. I think now is the time where it's going to be something else. Like, I don't know why. So I do think that as much as the, like, you know, Shireen explaining that they could all just buy their letters and like this, you know, all of the ways that this got broken there, like, it is also on the production side of like telling them what they're bidding on. So I think that there is a way to repair this.
Mm-hmm. So Christian Hubicki, the great Dr. Christian Hubicki, is in the chat, and he says that he agrees, bring back the auction in the 5-hour challenge, that Jeff said that the audience does not care to watch survivors eat a hot dog or even a pack of hot dogs.
Yeah,
I think we can get some funny moments from this.
I'm even thinking about, like, you guys are going to talk about it later, but like Randy with the cookies and Survivor Gabon, like there was, you know, there was drama and politics in that, in the fact that he, you know, Sugar took his last cookie. Like, there's stuff you can do with it. I just don't know why they're not seeing it that way.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a huge segment. And if it's food and also other things, and there's just an element of surprise or chance in it, then I think that you fix the problem.
But, you know, in fairness, that, you know, the auction is something that really has nothing to do with the game, just takes away from the strategy. People may not be interested in it. You know, it's nothing like the Edge of Extinction. The auction is over in 5 minutes. It's not in every episode. Okay.
But that's a human story.
That's a human story. Okay. Also, Will bids on a note. He gets banished from the auction. And Jenny, I actually like this. Like, on the surface, it's a little bit like the, like, I think this happens also in, Heroes versus Villains. I feel like that, Siska, Prince Siska kind of gets like, sent to, Exile Island there, but it's not like the Jamal thing of like, oh, you pulled the thing, no free lunch on Survivor, you lost your vote tonight. It's on the surface, it looks bad, but then he actually like got something good.
Well, yeah, and I think for a second he thinks that he gets a clue to immunity idol, which would be like a definitely like a whole other thing. But I mean, they give him the opportunity for something where it's like, okay, like you got a raw deal. You have no idea what's going back on at the auction and what kind of food everyone is getting. And you got unlucky. Well, you have an opportunity here to have all of these snacks that can last you the rest of the game. And you have the option of keeping that to yourself. And I think that adds like a fun little element. And then we ultimately get Will deciding that he's going to share it with everyone, despite the fact that we're all just at the auction.
I do wonder, Phil, like, that I do not have any sense of how far away that cooler was from the camp, but it seemed like it was kind of like in an open area. Like, how does anybody not just stumble onto the hole in the ground with the cooler on their next idol hunt?
Yeah, it looks like it was right next to like Rodney's like, bed. Like,
I think Will may not have been as generous. He might have just been like, hey, I am going to so get caught on this. I better share this with everybody.
I feel like that might make sense, because I feel like I would totally use the food as an advantage and use it to like what Jericho does in Australian Survivor, where you can, you know, share it with some person and be like, yo, this is going to be our rations. This is going to help us to get to the end of the game. I mean, I guess good on Will for giving it to everyone else, but I think he totally squandered, you know, what could have been a great advantage for him in the game.
Yeah, I just don't know how he could have hit it.
Yeah.
Here's what
go to the ocean.
Here's what it needed to be. It needed to be like a big trunk that says, Survivor production equipment, do not touch. and then just be over there. And then he would have known like where it was. And then like just go to it. I think that's the only thing.
Well, the other thing is like, where did the box go? Because it ends up being a like point of contention with why they think that there was something up. Because it was like, well, where did it come from? from? Like, where did these, like, if there had to have been a box or something more that he's hiding, or he got something else to it. It's like, we never got an explanation of what Will actually did with the box, because apparently he just pulled out the jars and then maybe production took the boxes away and said, okay, we're taking this here.
Well, he had the cooler. That's really what it was. Like, he had like those jars and they were in like sort of like the like Coleman cooler that was like buried in the ground.
Well, was it not within like a wooden box as well?
I don't think so.
They just buried it in the ground, I think.
It was just the cooler.
It was like a tailgate. Yeah. That's what it was. Okay. I mentioned I like Jeff giving Shireen the opportunity to block Will from getting the letter. At least, you know, that the one nice thing about the whole like Will and Shireen thing, like at least there is like there was like some moment of catharsis that happened in the actual show of, okay, he was horrible to her, and then she at least got the pleasure to block him from getting the letter. At least that we got something, which we don't normally get in a Survivor season.
Yeah, she was given an opportunity to be like, you know, you made things personal with me, and so you're trying to. And I did like that her explanation of it wasn't that you were just terrible to me, and I'm going to take this personal thing away from you. Where, I mean, while we know that very much for her was, you know, behind her reasoning for just being like, I'm not giving this guy his letter while he was just told me I have no soul and that no one misses me and all of these things. But I like that she said, like, I'm a super fan. Like, you know, this is how it works. Like, he bought himself out of the auction. He didn't get the opportunity to buy the letters. Mm-hmm. That's on him. So it is kind of a fun moment. And I do appreciate, like you said, Rob, that she does get her kind of catharsis from that situation where it's like she has very little that she can use against him. And that's her opportunity. And I don't think that she would have been able to live with herself if she just like, you know, kept her hand down in that moment.
Yeah. So after Jen goes home, we get down to where it's just Mike and Shireen versus the other six. And we get something that is, I think, a very interesting tribal council. It doesn't exactly work the way that they draw it up. Something in an episode called Survivor Russian Roulette. Phil, I do think that there were some interesting things here. And like, I do feel like that this was like the start of something where I feel like at the time we compared it a lot to sort of like the Three Amigos Tribal Council. And I feel like I was more critical at the time about the way that Mike played this, but I actually think I liked it more in the hindsight, or on this rewatch.
Yeah, because I mean, I personally thought that like the way he played it made it kind of obvious that he's going to keep the idol. Like, what if Mike is not going to give his idol to someone else? Like, but I mean, what did you think?
Got two votes.
Yeah, let me just set this up for people who are listening to the podcast and don't remember exactly how this went. So there's the big alliance of six. There's Mike has individual immunity and an idol in his pocket. Shireen has nothing. Mike says that.
Shireen,
I'm not going to do the whole thing. Shireen's going to write down Tyler's name. I am going to play my idol on Shireen, and I am also going to write down another random name out of you six. And ultimately, Tyler and Will are two of the people that end up voting for Dan. Mike does not play the idol on Shireen, but does come away from that tribal council with
Dan got two votes.
I really think that if, you know, like Mike didn't have to do this. Mm-hmm. Again, this is something I said already that, like, you know, he was protected, but he sees an opportunity to change things up and cause dissension in the group via, you know, the idol that he has and Shireen, and decides to take that chance. And I really think this is one of those things where it's like, you know, if one other person gets paranoid and decides to change their vote and this actually works, like, we're applauding Mike for an absolutely like brilliant move. And it's like absolutely worth trying as well, because, you know, now they know that he has the idol. So that's going to continue to cause them to scramble even before the next immunity challenge, because they know that even if Mike doesn't win, he's got an idol. So they're going to have to come up with another plan. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that he at least went for it. I do see what Phil is saying, and that, like, because he announces, okay, well, this is how it's going to go, that it does, possibly show the hand that he's like going to bluff and isn't going to play the idol, but you have to go for that. Yeah. Like, I think in so many cases, people sit on that idol and they don't even try anything because they're protected.
So I do think that, like, where the beauty in it ends up coming from, like, I think that at this point, and we don't have Mike on the phone, so we can't really tell you exactly what was going through his head. I did a long interview with him after the season, and maybe we got into this, but I think that he might have known that, okay, I'm losing Shireen no matter what, but I still have this idol in my pocket. And really, the beauty in this is for the next round of voting, where, okay, Dan got two votes, he tells everybody. So now, if he was able to potentially get Dan and Sierra to vote with him in the next round, because again, he's like, I have the idol. You can't get rid of me in the next round. Because we see at the final five where, everybody's trying to vote out, at the final six, everybody tries to vote out Carolyn. And then after that's over, she's like, well, I still am going to vote with these people because, as long as Mike is up for the vote, if he doesn't win immunity, Mike is still gonna be the person going home. He still had the idol, so he's still like saying, like,
you can't get rid of me.
So if I'm Dan, maybe at that point I just got two votes, maybe I'm thinking about maybe taking Sierra and jumping back with Mike at the next vote.
Yeah, I think also it's true, just on top of that all, it's just great for showboating for the jury, I'd say, because now it's like you get to see not only Mike winning all these challenges, but he's crushing it at the tribal council, putting on an impressive performance, regardless of if it even works or not. Yeah, I guess that's true.
And you're sending Shireen to the jury. You need to have people on the jury that are going to vote for you. She's going to go there and go be like a super vocal Mike supporter on the jury. So, he realizes, like, I got to win out. I need this idol anyway. So I don't think that was the worst case scenario for him to lose Shireen.
Yeah, not to jump ahead too much. Oh, sorry.
I was just saying, and like literally people changed their votes. Like, it could have almost worked. Like I said, like someone, one or two more people get scared and like throw their vote somewhere else. Like that totally could have worked. So I don't think that it was for naught,
Yeah.
Yeah. But Shireen, for some reason, at the final tribal council, she actually votes for Carolyn. And that's not really specified why, I'd say. It's just something odd.
At the final tribal?
Yeah.
I thought Sierra is the vote for Carolyn.
I thought.
Maybe the Wikipedia is wrong. My apologies.
Okay. Yeah. Shireen is one of the Mike votes at the final tribal council. Sierra is the one vote for Carolyn, and Rodney's the one vote for Will.
Right. Yeah.
So speaking of Rodney, let's talk about Rodney's birthday, because I loved everything about Rodney's birthday. I feel like that Rodney's birthday is to Survivor as Keisha's birthday is to Big Brother. Is that sacrilege?
I think that Keisha's birthday is like a little bit more legendary, but I do think that the concept of like Rodney's birthday as an event is definitely, I don't think that anyone else's birthday on Survivor is memorable.
But biggest like Survivor
no
birthday.
One's talking, no one else is talking about anyone else's birthday on Survivor. So in that, it is the birthday event of Survivor. So I will give Rodney that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd say the entire moment where Rodney's like kicking like the dishes on the beach, like, oh, I'm washing dishes on my damn birthday, and the whole music and the rain coming down during his confessional. It's genius. I think that's one of the Survivor highlights for me.
So we get the setup of Rodney is talking about like, well, look, it's his birthday and no matter what, he's going to get picked. He even tells that there's great foreshadowing, like an episode or two before, that he really was disappointed that Carolyn didn't take him on an earlier reward, because he felt like, well, if he could go on that reward, then it was already a foregone conclusion. Everybody's going to take him for the reward on his birthday. So he would have another reward also. So that would have been great. But he didn't get taken on that one and he was already upset. And then he does not get taken on the one on his birthday. And he's so upset with Mama C, where it's Mike, Carolyn, and Sierra. They are a team. They win. It's basically the three of them are on a team versus, I guess it's Tyler, Dan, and Rodney, and Will, I do not think was picked.
Will didn't get picked.
Was not eligible. Yeah. And Rodney wanted one of the three of them to sub out. And in fairness to Carolyn and Sierra, they were more under the impression if they won and they got to pick two people, they would pick Rodney. But because this was a team challenge, then that was not part of the deal. And Rodney is not happy.
I think the other element is that, like, the type of reward it was, where it was like they go to the orphanage and they bring the, like, it's like the soul, like, the soul food type one, where it's like, you know, a once in a lifetime experience, where it's not just like we get food, where it's like, you know, that's the thing where, like, people are not going to give it up. And I think that that's also plays into Carolyn being like, this is my survivor experience. And I literally just rightfully won the opportunity to, you know, go to this orphanage, like, meet all of these children. They have had no contact with, like, other people besides, like, production. And so I think that, like, that is seen as, like, a special reward on top of the regular ones. So that didn't help the situation. But I love what Carolyn also says about being like, you know, you're playing Survivor on your birthday. Like, yeah, okay, I know that you're not eating, you didn't get a cake, and, you know, maybe you didn't get, like, surf and turf or barbecue on your birthday, or a single M&M even. But, like, you are literally living your dream of so many people would love to be in your spot right now, playing Survivor and, you know, making it to whatever the final, like, seven was or whatever, seven at that point. Like, that's not a terrible birthday. Like, have some perspective here. Yeah.
It's nothing but entitlement, just to be honest. It's just like Rodney feeling like it's my birthday, so I have to have it. But yeah.
So, all right, while they're on the reward, Rodney is carrying on. And so he ends up coming up with a plan. I had forgotten about this part of it. He ends up coming up with a plan. He's like, all right, I'm going to tell everybody that I'm so sad. I'm going to quit the game because I didn't get the reward and I had it. And then Mike won't play his idol because he's going to think I'm going to quit. And then he's not going to play the idol. And Tyler is just like, this is not going to work. This is a bad plan. He's like, I'm going to put my De Niro on, bro. He's totally going to believe it. I really felt like this was Rodney. Like, I think he knew this plan was not going to work, but he's just like, well, that I could just say that I'm doing it as an act, but I'm really just going to carry on about my birthday for the next 72 hours where I want to do this. The next time I'm mad about something, I want to tell everybody, no, this is a fake plan. I'm not really mad about this. I'm just pretending I'm mad about it so I can keep talking about this thing, but I'm not really, but I'm just going to keep talking about this thing.
Well, I think he also realizes that people are like, oh my God, dude, like, he's like, no, it's an act. Yeah, so actually so that Mike doesn't play the idol. So it's actually pretty genius move.
Yeah.
So
it's like Jean Robert playing the bad guy in China. It's like, all right, this is literally just you. And Mike does not buy it for a second. Like, as soon as Mike comes back to camp, he's like, all right, Rodney, like, what are we doing?
I'm not voting for you.
Yeah.
We're all laying in the shelter, and Mike's like, yeah, I'm not voting for you. It's like, oh, well, I guess. So much for that plan.
Yeah. I know this. The good list is running surprisingly long. I think that Carolyn voting out Tyler, which, like, I think is like an interesting strategic move to talk about, that she decides to make that move where that's like her number one ally. But she feels like, OK, well, I don't know if I can beat him if I get to the end with it. Also, that he kind of wants me to play the idol for him. And she has like that strategic decision to move. So I just think that's another interesting point in the season at the final seven and a choice that she has to make.
Yeah.
Well, and I think Carolyn's looking at the field and it's like, Mike's got immunity and Tyler is the next, like, most formidable opponent of hers. And so she's going to play her idol that she might need in a later round for Tyler to get out. What? Dan? Sierra? Rodney, like, she's looking at the field and saying, like, how is this good for my game? So I have all the respect in the world for Carolyn for, you know, getting rid of the next greater threat to her game.
Just to say so she actually wins the immunity in that round. So she's actually immune And Tyler had said to her that, and, hey,
but Mike has an idol as
well. Mike has his idol. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Right. That's right.
So they were going to have to split, or they were going to have to put their votes somewhere. And so ultimately they, but they also still need to put votes on Mike because they don't want to let Mike get the free ride of potentially. So they're going to put 4 votes on Mike. And I think he thought they were putting the votes on Dan, but in fact, they were putting the votes on Tyler, and she could have saved him, but she didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love
interesting.
That.
It's interesting. Then, we get to the final 6. We haven't talked at all about that Dan has an advantage in this season. He has the extra vote. He does not play it well, but this is the first season in which we get the extra vote. And Phil, when I did the evolution strategy with Josh Wiggler, we talked about here in season 30, the extra vote is here. And by the end of the 30s, I think we will have like a good understanding of how to play the extra vote. And I do feel like that Survivor has delivered on that promise. I think that we have seen it enough times that we have a better idea of like what you want to and not want to be doing with the extra vote.
Yeah, I also think they work out the kinks a little bit better with how the extra vote is actually like delivered, because here I feel like Dan totally screws himself over. I mean, he was kind of screwed anyways, but you know, now that, you know, like when he called for his extra vote, Carolyn was able to suss out, Okay, they're obviously voting for me.
It's
so
like the beginning, I think, like sort of like the little seeds baby of advantage getting. Where, you know, he's playing his extra vote. All right, I'm going to play my idol because, like when one advantage comes out, like all the advantages come out.
Yeah, I also just think it's perfect, you know, poetic justice for Dan Foley to leave the game. We haven't talked that much about Dan Foley. And I just wanted to say, you know, a lot of people on the internet, they love to say that, you know, Dan is just this larger than life character. You know, I love to watch Dan. Dan's so funny. But honestly, you know, for me watching this season, it wasn't that much fun because Dan wasn't really a character to me. He's just kind of a misogynist. You know, he was kind of just this deeply human person. And, you know, he kind of carried a lot of the misogyny that is just like true in a lot of our society. So it just kind of was not that fun to watch. I don't know. A lot of people, you know, they love to say, oh, Dan's so fun. And It was nice to see Dan have this epic downfall, but good riddance, Dan. Yeah. I don't really care for you that much.
In fairness, we're still only on the good list.
Oh, okay.
we haven't gotten fully there yet. Yeah.
Can we talk about something that I noticed about the Dan extra vote?
Go for it.
And I don't know if either of you noticed it in your rewatch. So when Shireen gets voted out, so at the tribal council where Mike bluffs the idol play, mm-hmm. Mike says after the votes are read and he knows that Shireen's going home, Mike says, and Dan still has 2 votes.
Dan got 2 votes.
But then we get like later on, Carolyn tells Mike about Dan having the extra vote, and that's like, it's like, you know, made to be like a bonding moment between them. And we get a confessional from Mike where he acts as if this is like new information to him. And I don't know if this is like continuity error or what, but like, I found it very funny in the rewatch where I was like, did Mike not mention literally out loud at a previous tribal council that Dan still has 2 votes?
So Dan has 2 votes, Dan got 2 votes.
Oh,
like
Dan
got voted for twice.
Okay.
And Mike knew he had an advantage,
totally,
but he didn't know what Dan's advantage was. And I think other players
I understand. 2 votes. I read that as like Dan still has 2 votes to use and he didn't get voted out here. That's so funny.
Yeah, that is funny.
I'm glad we've worked this out together.
Yeah. but yeah, some of the other players like snuck into Dan's bag and they had seen what it was. And I think
it was a huge advantage too. It was like a giant box.
Yeah, they like gave it to him like in a box like that you would get like steak knives.
Like a poker set.
right, suitcase. Bring in the extra vote. Okay.
Yeah.
And then we also have a reward to fix wishing. We get the puzzle, which was hilarious that it takes them an hour to come up with a reward with all the fix-ins.
And Jeff is like, it's something. You get things with it.
Yeah, it's more of a blue-collar phrase. Like, don't get hung up on having perfect grammar.
Also, the N cube has a literal apostrophe on it. Like, you know that there is some sort of N apostrophe, like, in the phrase.
Yeah, I think so Sierra's cute. Like, I think he's trying to tell us a clue. And like, Dan and Rodney, like, shh. Like, we need to think. Like, don't listen to him. We're concentrating. Reward to fix wishing. That's great. And then, ultimately, we're getting pretty close to the end of my good list. Because, like, ultimately, I think that the finale is a real snore. The entire finale of the show is an undercard for the reveal of the second chancers.
Getting us through that whole thing.
Yeah, it's just you're getting punchy with like, all right, Mike, well, competition, like the reward challenge. Mike wins the reward challenge. Okay, now immunity challenge. Mike wins the immunity challenge. Like,
you have
like,
to watch Mike practice the challenge too. It's like, oh, we really got to see him go through all this. Like,
right. Yeah. I will say the fire making challenge was exciting finish. Rare to see a woman beat a man in the final four, fire making, good for Mama C. So that was good, but otherwise, a real lackluster finale. Bad finale.
Used all my coconut husk, bro. Used all my coconut.
Yeah.
And Ronnie stays bitter to the very end. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm pretty sure that he, like, you know, curses at Mike on the way out. Like, you know, he stays mad the entire time. It doesn't matter.
Okay, let's get to my bad list of things. Okay, we've talked about a lot of the bad, but let's go back to a couple of different things that we haven't talked about too much. The Nina storyline and how she's treated at No Collar, like, it does not seem like they really gave her a fair shake at the No Collar tribe. And a couple of times they just like, oh my God, Nina, why do you have to make everything about being deaf?
It's, I don't know. We got maybe one instance where, you know, Joe was like kind of being nice to her, but the rest of the time it was just like Jen and Haley, like, oh my God, Nina, you're so old. Like, we don't hate you because you're deaf. We hate you because you're old. And Nina's like Lil, like, oh, why didn't I get to?
I would have gone skinny dipping. Yeah,
I think it's a difficult situation because I do think that, you know, again, six people tribes suck. Like, mm-hmm. there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah.
And yeah, right. And you know, like for Nina, not like she is older than Jen and Haley, who are very close in age. And I think that, again, we already kind of touched on this earlier, that like, I think Nina was kind of shoehorned into this No Collar tribe, and it mm-hmm. gets talked about in her boot episode how she has a lot more like white collar tendencies to her. So I think that it's a difficult situation where, you know, especially because Nina loses her hearing later in her life, it's an insecurity of hers. Mm-hmm. And so for her, she's feeling like any time that she's feeling left out, it's about that, because that's her insecurity. And also a lot of it is about that they just don't have anything in common with, you know, Jen and Haley. But the way that it's handled is like the frustration of like, right. It's not about your hearing. It's like, it could be handled so much more sensitively. Like, I truly believe that, you know, Jen and Haley and Joe and all of them, like, that they did not dislike Nina because, you know, she was like hearing impaired. But I think that just the way that insecurity of hers was handled was not done the most sensitively that it could be.
Yeah. There's also the third challenge. I think it's the episode where Nina goes home, where she is not sitting out. They just like feel like, okay, well, this might work better if she's not involved with what we're doing. Like, yeah,
they didn't think out the challenges beforehand. Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
I guess like they, you know, you went through it with Chrissy, but mm-hmm. Christy, but I don't know. I they could have planned out a lot of these challenges a little bit better for Nina.
Yeah. So that stuff is not fun. You know, we talked about this with The Edge of Extinction last week. This is not a season where Survivor has done a good job here with casting for diversity here in 2014, or is airing in 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah. You just get like Will, right? Like, I'm.
Well, and yeah, so Kim is voted out first.
Right.
And I know that, like,
And Shireen is there also.
Yeah. But like, compared to like the way that cast should look, it was probably easily one of the least diverse casts in Survivor history.
And I think it speaks to like that a hole in their casting process where it seems like that Will was also like a recruit where it was like, I think they were like, okay, well, like, we got to find somebody like, oh, this guy has a YouTube video. Okay. It just seems like that they did not have any sort of like resources as opposed to like, hopefully where we are now to be able to, you know, bring in like good and diverse players who actually know what they're doing on the show.
Yeah, like Will and Monifa were actually supposed to be on Amazing Race, and like last minute they just grabbed Will because someone like left the cast or something like that. So I don't know who else they had in mind, but probably not a good look. And especially because before the season, Jeff was also like, yeah, the cast of season 29 wasn't great, but this is one of our best casts we've ever had.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, looking at it, it's not the best.
Well, especially like when the theme of the season is supposed to be like, you know, like representation of like different styles of living, like worlds apart. And like you have a blue collar tribe that's like 100% white. And like, I don't know. I just feel like you're trying to cover like three different ways of like life, and you're not properly like representing. Like, it's like, then don't even try to make this a theme. It's worlds apart. And like 90% of the cast is white. Like, it just doesn't really align well with like the theme itself.
Let me see. You want to talk about the tribe name America?
I don't like, what are we doing here? They like,
in the words of Haley, I love our new tribe name.
I will say the one thing that I never noticed before that they touch on very briefly is I never saw before that it's like the red, white, and blue of the, you know, white collar, blue collar, and red is the no collar. I was like, okay, all right. I'm not as mad at it. Like, at least there was something to it, but still. Shireen calls it out in the episode. She says that it's the worst tribe name ever.
Yes, the juxtaposition of Haley saying it's a great name, and then Shireen being like, "This is the dumbest name I've ever heard."
And she's like, "Yeah, she's like Sarah Palin. She says all sorts of crazy stuff, and she doesn't even say America." I was like, "That's the kind of dated reference I wanted for Tom Brady." Which is like, "Yeah, what's he been up to? I haven't seen him in a minute."
Still relevant.
Yeah, walking around all drunk, naming tribes. Tom Brady. Yeah,
I would have been embarrassed. Like, I agree with Shireen. Like, I would, if I was on a tribe and we named America, I would have had to like beg to change it. Because I don't know.
Yeah,
like, well, I certainly wouldn't have let it happen as a Canadian.
Right. Like, I feel like that maybe if you were there at that merge brunch, maybe you could be like, all right, let's keep no bad ideas in brainstorming. Let's keep spitballing. Like, we don't have to lock this in yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Joe, don't start painting yet. Joe, hold up.
Oh, Joe already painted it.
Yeah.
Joe was just too eager to paint it. He already started it before they decided it.
Yeah. The immunity idol and necklace, very ugly in this season also. Discussed with Mike Bloom when we ranked the aesthetics of the immunity necklaces.
Oh, wait, you were talking about the necklace. I was thinking of the actual, like,
ugly
immunity. Yeah, I don't know what that, the shipwreck theme they have, like, it's not really fully fleshed out, I'd say. The tribal council's
it made no
right,
sense. Why?
But,
why?
Like, what are we doing? Yeah.
It just looked like jagged, like, yellow teeth or something. It was,
Yeah. Okay. I guess let's go back to the Dan Foley stuff, because Phil, you make a good point. We probably didn't talk enough about Dan. It's just like, you know, for the thing with Dan, I feel like it's almost like that there's not like one specific moment, and stop me if I'm wrong on this. It's just sort of like, you know, just goes on the whole season. Like, Jenny, do you feel like that there's one particular moment that is like the worst of all his offenses?
I mean, the one thing that I think of, and it's so funny, like we've already said that, you know, what ends up being talked about at the reunion is how he criticized his edit. And then it ends up being a clip about what he said about Rodney's mom. But I think that you do have to go back to like what he said about like active players in the game that, you know, it's very complicated. How there's this scene after the tribal council where the Will versus Shireen thing gets brought up. And then they have, you know, Shireen and Will are, you know, sitting in the water and, or Shireen and Dan are sitting in the water and Dan says, oh, I had no idea. And I'm so sorry that that happened to you. And it seems like he gets it and that he's, you know, having this moment of like clarity where he feels bad about how, you know, Will talked to her and that her past and all of this stuff. And then we get this confessional of him where he basically says, well, Shireen plays the victim a lot and, you know, she's a drama queen. And it's like after what was supposed to be like a, you know, sincere moment with him basically being like, well, I think that she actually kind of brings it upon herself and she plays the victim. It's like that looks so bad because it makes everything that he said to her look so fake. And that was the part for me that I felt the most uncomfortable about.
He's a big, however, guy. Like, he could start a sentence like with almost anything, and you're like, oh, okay. Where he's like, Shireen comes from a troubled background, and I respect everything she's been through. However, and then goes on to say something like, oh no, Dan.
Now I'm going to victim blame.
However,
people on the podcast aren't getting to watch Rob do this impression because Rob does it on point because Dan talks with his whole mouth. He moves he always opens and closes his mouth like a valve. Like, I don't know what's going on. Continue.
Sorry. Yeah. He also like, you know, he says a lot of stuff in confessional, that he also, talked about, you know, Shireen, that, somebody needs to slap this woman. I think that's, the chat had that one. That's probably the one that, he gets the, you know, the most, criticism for, but he also like has a couple times, like he's having conversations like with Shireen in the water, he's just like dragging her for no reason. He's like, what is it with you, super fan? Can't do simple math. What is like, just trying to like say to her, like, why won't you join us? Why? Like, you're so stupid.
Yeah, it's like, it's just a rude thing to say to someone. Like, that's the thing with Dan is that, you know, sometimes Dan has his moments where it's just like, this guy is an oaf. Like when, like watching Dan, like just start juggling out of nowhere. Like, all right, who is this guy? But then, you know, sometimes he just really, really like lays it on thick with just like being such an a-hole that it's, there's nothing that I enjoy about watching this because again, this is how people are like. It's not like you're some like crazy kooky character that no one's ever seen before. It's just like, yeah, like this sucks. Like, I don't like this at all.
Yeah.
There's so many instances. And I think the problem as well is that like, it's perpetuated with how everyone talks about Shireen the whole season. So it's like a lot of people feel justified in their opinion. And like, I do get the sense that like, Shireen is the kind of person that can be a lot at first. And like, you even see it in like her relationship with Jen, where like, you know, Jen even says like, you know, we get the confessional from Jen where it's like, oh, it's a race between Max and Shireen to see who can be the most annoying. And like, you know, and then she kind of comes around and she says like, you know, they kind of seem to have a good relationship around the time that they both go out in the game because I think that it's a slow burn with Shireen where it's like you kind of see past her, like, you know, neuroses and see her for like who she really is, and maybe get some context for the person, the way that she is. And I think that because so much of that alliance just ends up getting, you know, behind this idea of like Shireen is the worst, Shireen plays the victim, Shireen's an idiot. And So these people feel justified in like making these statements either in confessional or to her directly because they're having conversations with other people. And it's, there's not a single offender in this case, which is the issue, is that they're all kind of like perpetuating each other's bad behavior. And there's only so much that people like Mike can do where we see him, you know, trying to correct, you know, Rodney and Dan with how they treat Sierra after, you know, she got votes. Like, he can't be in every situation to tell people to not do that. And also, again, people are playing a game and they're trying to like not, you know, make mm-hmm. things more complicated and jump on people that they're working with in the game. So it's really bad. The slap, yeah, someone slapped this woman was probably the mm-hmm. the worst.
And Jeff brings that one up at the finale also.
Yes,
and,
he does.
And Dan says that, you ever say you feel like killing someone? You're not really going to go and attempt murder.
Maybe don't say that, Dan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like not.
Yeah.
Good.
And I do think that, you know, Rodney, I think that most of the stuff that like he ends up arguing with Lindsay and Sierra, I just think he ends up getting like overshadowed by Dan and by Will then like in the second half of the season.
I think Rodney says more things about women, but like consistently, but they're not quite, they're more like veiled, like generic statements about women in general, where he doesn't make as many like direct statements about the women in the game. Although he does make the one comment about like, any woman that gets a tattoo on her face is screwed up or something like that, like about
the
Lindsay
stuck at
like,
life or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Not sure if Rodney necessarily has his finger on the pulse of everything that's true and not true in the world.
Hmm. Yeah. The thing is, I feel like Rodney kind of is able to kind of hide behind his like accent and his look and everything. Like when you look at Rodney, you kind of know, like you know what you're getting. It doesn't excuse anything, but I think a lot of people kind of just like, all right, yeah, that's kind of who Rodney is. You know what I mean? Hmm. Versus some of the stuff that Dan and Will do. Again, not excusing anything that Rodney does because,
Let me
keep it real. Keep it real.
Yeah. From one of our listeners, Matthew Prusky, was, is Rodney good at Survivor though?
No.
Okay, so here's the thing. I think, and this is interestingly, I don't know if anyone has checked out Max Dawson's interview with Dalton Ross.
Yeah, the quarantine. Yeah. Yes.
I was already thinking about one of the things that he touches on in his interview with Dalton Ross, and you know, thinking about this podcast today. So it was interesting that Max brought it up. And I really think that Rodney is one of those cases where I don't think that he was in a good psychological place mm-hmm. to go on Survivor. His, you know, the theme of his sister, who he finds dead, the way that it gets brought up and the way that he talks about it, like later in the season where he's like, oh, I've come to peace with it. Like, I think that, like Rodney, one, I think he was young. And I think that also, you know, I don't co-sign the person that he is today by any means. And I think that like a lot of things have also come out about people since then. But I think that if you're looking at Rodney in this season, I think that he was young. He had gone through a traumatic experience and he had a lot of growing up to do. And I don't think that he was in a good psychological headspace for the game. And you saw it play out in how he just unraveled slowly with not getting rewards and how he acted mm-hmm. and how he treated people. And he just didn't seem to be having fun. And he didn't take any adversity well. And I just think that this, you know, Max kind of talks about how I don't think that they do that, you know, CBS or casting or whoever does a good enough job screening people psychologically before these games. And I don't think that, you know, I think that they focus so much on like people's story where like, oh, you've gone through trauma. Oh, yeah. Like you found your sister dead. What a great story. And they're not thinking about what that actually means for a person, and you're about to go put them through like such a major experience.
Yeah. So I think that those are really good points. I think in the case of Rodney, though, I do think that probably casting, I don't know if necessarily that they were attracted to him because of the story of his trauma, which no doubt had a major impact in, you know, his life you know, both on and off of Survivor. But I just think that they saw him as like this big, larger than life character, sort of like a Jersey Shore type guy, where that I think that they were not really looking too deep into, okay, maybe there are some other issues that might be under the surface that might end up like, who knows how this is going to come up. Hey, this guy's a wild, this guy's going to be funny. He's like, you know, says all this crazy stuff about Tom Brady and being a hustler. Like, oh, definitely put him on the show.
Yeah. Well, and even in my rewatch, I didn't remember some of it. So it goes to show that they can, they think that they can, you know, people will just focus on those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Rodney in the first episode, like showing Lindsay his tattoo, like about his sister and kind of using it to manipulate her kind of shows you kind of all you need to know about where his headspace was at the game. And, you know, he wanted to prepare himself for the game, but I don't think he was fully over it. But again, trying to put that aside, although you really can't, but looking at Rodney's game, Rodney does have a few strengths. I think that Rodney is someone who's always looking for numbers. He's always someone who, like, you know, he's kind of a social butterfly, where as soon as Rodney steps onto a new tribe, he's like, all right, who can I pull in for numbers? But watching Rodney, that's kind of all he does. He kind of finds his numbers and stays with them. And he, and like, you know, over the course of the game, you know, he becomes hungry, becomes tired, he can't deal with his stress. And he kind of, like we already said, like he peters out. And so the numbers aren't enough to sustain him for the end of the game. I don't think if Rodney came back, he'd probably put himself in the same position, if not worse.
Yeah,
I'd say.
So I do think that you're right, Phil, that Rodney does have some really good skill sets. I think that maybe a great analogy for Rodney might be the fire that he builds at the end of the game. Takes him a while to get it going, but at one point that flame is super high. It looks like it's going to go right through that rope. But as Jeff says, hey, that's all coconut husk. It's not, it does not have a structure. There's not substance there. It burns bright, it burns hot, and it comes crashing back down to the earth, and he's unable to really get it back going. And Carolyn just sails past him to the end.
Yeah. Is there any way that Rodney would have won the, like, I know they did at the reunion, like Rodney versus Mike, which of course, like, there's no way, but like Rodney versus Carolyn, it's a sweep for Carolyn, right?
You think so? I think that would be hard to say. I don't know necessarily.
I don't think it's a sweep. I don't think it's a sweep, but I still think that Carolyn wins.
I don't think that Carolyn had a good relationship with the no collar people. Like, I think that they might have been salty with her from when she didn't stick with them at the merge. Like, I don't think that her and Jen and Haley were necessarily on the same page. I don't know what her relationship was like with Joe. So I think
also
that really
flipped on Shireen too.
Yeah, no collar and Shireen, I don't think had a great relationship with Carolyn. So
well,
I think
she completely turned her back on Shireen. So
no collar and Shireen, I think, would have really been the kings and queen makers.
But I mean, in a situation where it's Carolyn, Rodney, and Will, let's say, then it's like you're Jen or Haley or Joe, you're kind of like, this is all bad to me, possibly.
Yeah.
But Jen really hated Carolyn and like mentions her, like her goodbye like message or whatever is like during the vote reveal is really funny, where she's like, hate this person, this person sucks. Like she does mention Carolyn's specifically, and I think that, I can't remember specifically, someone mentions during the jury questioning like that Carolyn was kind of cold to people, and like that they noticed that. So I don't think that Carolyn sweeps any situation, but I do think that she does have a good chance against Rodney.
Okay. Couple other quick things. We have the family visit is in the finale.
I don't care about seeing Mike's
mom. It's too late.
Yeah.
It's so late. Like, I just feel like this is going to be over in like 2 days. Like, it just seems so, I don't know.
One of the least interesting family visits, just kind of tacked in there. I guess I don't have much to say about the
Rodney calls his dad bro, which was bro and brother, which was, I found interesting. I'm like, it's your dad, but okay.
Okay. Let's take some questions. Actually, do you want to talk about anything about the season 31 second chances reveal?
Hurt just my heart all back. Over again.
I have to say that this was harsher than I remember at the time.
Like, it sucked.
Jeff, like, did not really have, like, bedside manner with, like, no. First of all, he's like, all right, just skedaddle, everybody. We got to get to them. And then he starts, I don't know if they were, like, running out of time, but he starts going through the people and like, oh, my heart broke for T-Bird, because Jeff was like, sort of like, all right, okay. So he like makes a big fuss. Kelly Wigglesworth, Kimmy, Jeff Varner, you have a second shot. Keith Nail, everybody loves you. And then he gets to like T-Bird, Stephanie, and PG. T-Bird, you will not get a second shot. Stephanie, you will not get a second shot. Like, he's just like blowing through these. Like, you're good, you're good, you're out.
I'm running out of time. I gotta get through this.
Yeah.
He has Culpepper sitting next to Spencer and Joe. Like,
he's so funny. Culpepper says, look who the F I'm sitting next to.
Yeah. When he gets down to Brad Culpepper, he's like, all right, we got two spots left. All right, who's left? Joe Anglum, Spencer, and Brad Culpepper. Okay. Only two of you will make the field.
It's like you banged through the last ones, Jeff. Let's get to it. I know what's happening here.
Watching the Shane Powers thing, that was just always gutting.
Yeah. Heard and Shane Powers heard a lot to watch.
Yeah, Max gave like a big like Max, thumbs down.
Yeah, boom. Max behind Shane giving the thumbs down. That was great.
There was one person that really jumped out. I was like, wait, that person was in the mix for second chances. Did either of you have a person like that?
I forgot who Stephanie Valencia was, honest. I knew who she was, but
Yes. When we got to a row of like, all right, Monica Padilla, Michaela. Yeah.
Michaela
from Millennials vs. Gen X. Michaela that Brandon said was Delilah. Kelly Wentworth and Natalie Pennarelli.
That whole row, I was like, I remembered who got on, and I was like, I could not even remember that these other two were in contention.
Yeah. So there you
go. Justice for Jim Rice. That's all I have to say.
Justice for Jim Rice. Yeah. I remember the night of this finale. I remember like having like at the after party, like having a drink with Jim Rice and Troy Zan and Natalie Tenorelli and a lot of the people that didn't go. It was a fun night. Okay. Let's take some questions. Let's take some questions from the listeners we're on track. This is the longest one of these that we've done Time is flying by. Okay. All right. Let's see. Okay. We've talked about Rodney. Let's see. Michael M. Was it a mistake for Carolyn to vote out Tyler?
No, I don't think so, because I think Tyler, just because of perception and stuff, I feel like he would have been a bigger threat than Carolyn, regardless of the games they play. I think Tyler was playing a little bit of a better game than Carolyn. So I think it was good for her to take out. I mean, she made it to the end. Why would it be a mistake?
The only thing I can think of is that keeping Tyler in was maybe one of the best chances for somebody to beat Mike in immunity. Mm-hmm. And she was gonna have to get rid of Tyler eventually, but she needed Mike out. And so I guess I could look at it from the stance of, if Tyler is around a little bit longer, he still has her best interests at heart, but I don't think that using her idol on him would have been a good move.
She got to the end. I mean, really, what are you going to change? Like, and I feel like that's her concern.
And getting his vote wouldn't have made her win. So it's not like
it that much. Okay.
No.
We talked about Mike being robbed from second chances. There's a question from Andy from Cincinnati. How would Mike do on second chances?
Huh?
He would have done well.
I don't. You think so?
I mean, I don't think. I see him very much in like the Ben Driebergen spot, mm-hmm. where and it's hard to think about it because like dynamics change as soon as you replace a person. But I do think that similarly, he's not going to be seen as much of a like strategic threat, because I think that people again focus so much on his immunity wins. So I think that he would have been seen as a good asset in the early game because he's a team player. But I don't think that people with the rest of the cast, I don't think that people are looking at Mike and saying like, this is the person that we need to get out like absolutely soon. I think that people are underestimating him and seeing him as someone that just won a lot of immunities.
Yeah,
I really think that, you know, I mean, Cambodia for me is like the highest like strategic season of all time. And I just don't think that Mike has like the strategic chops to actually, because people who made it to the end of that season, Jeremy, Spencer, Wentworth, not even Fishback, like, you know, all of them, they had like a really, really good handle on the strategy. Maybe Mike would be able to pull it off, but I would see Mike kind of going maybe at like a merge boot or something.
So,
like that.
Yeah,
that sounds right.
Yes. Okay. So what about Winners at War?
He probably would have made it pretty far, I'd say. I would say he would probably be around in the Dreamburgen spot. Like maybe he'd make it to like final seven, final. Yes.
The thing is, though, that he would be.
I meant he would have done better in Winners at War.
I think that he would be a big threat to win the immunities, though, down the stretch. Also, like where, you know, Ben, I don't think was winning a lot of challenges. You know, I feel like that Mike's has that gear too.
That's scary. That's true. There was no like huge threats, especially since they like took out, you know, Tyson and everything. That's valid. I don't know. Also, we have to weigh in the fact of Edge of Extinction and who knows what would go on with that, how Mike would do on Edge of Extinction. So I wouldn't know.
Okay. I think Mike thrives on Edge of Extinction. He's on 24/7. I think that he's like keeping everyone going there.
Okay.
He's like, don't rest. We got to make a fire here.
Yeah. Keep going. Like he's getting mad at everybody's work ethic. Okay.
How mad would people have been if Mike did the Chris Underwood and took out Tony at the final four? All right.
Oh, continue. My God.
Okay.
Don't put that out there.
Don't put that evil out into the world. Okay. We did talk about a lot of these different questions. This is from Mason Shira. How does the final four fire making compare to Cook Islands? I would argue that Worlds Apart is worse, since the only reason that Carolyn and Rodney didn't go longer than 1 hour is because they were given 5 flints between them. They easily could have just gone to matches, and they probably should have. Both fire makings were key contributors to Becky and Carolyn not being looked at favorably by the jury, with Carolyn probably taking a bigger hit in their eyes. Yeah, we didn't talk about that. It goes by pretty fast for us, but for the jurors, and maybe this was part of Mike's strategy of why he wanted to send them to a fire making challenge, that he was the one who was doing a lot of the fire making. It was not as much of a thing in Survivor 30 about, hey, we need to make sure we know how to make fire in case we go to the fire making challenge. So what do we think about the this fire making challenge versus Becky and Sundra?
I mean, I think it's also funny, like in that, you know, Jeff is continuously having to come over and give them new flint. I don't feel that it has any impact on how Carolyn ends up being viewed by the jury, though. I don't think that it ends up hurting her game. So if anything, I think like the fact that, you know, Mike sent her to fire and gave her the opportunity to like win her spot into the final three. And he even says that to her. It's like, it's going to look to the jury if you like, you know, win yourself there, as opposed to me just like going with the guys and voting like you out. Like you have an opportunity to get yourself there so you can say that you had that opportunity. But it wasn't. Yeah. I don't know. It was kind of funny to watch.
I don't think that the show treated it as like an embarrassment like they treated Becky and Sundra.
Right.
Yeah.
But they did show a lot of shots of like the jury, like Jen's like laying over, like looking like tired and stuff. Like it had to have been painfully boring for the jury just sitting there watching nothing but people trying to make fire for that long. So they did like show people being bored by it.
Yeah, I also just think that, you know, they need to kind of hype up Carolyn in some sense. Like, at least in Cook Islands, there was Yule versus Ozzy. But they needed to, if they embarrassed Carolyn like that, we wouldn't just know. I mean, we already did know that Mike won. But, you know, give Carolyn some hype.
Okay. A question from Ethan Costello. Does Mike Holloway's win this season make rewatching the season difficult, knowing that none of the strategy displayed in the last episode matters? And the only part of the episode that matters is the 10-minute challenge. Watching this season live was great because of it, but probably ruins a rewatch. So this is something that we've talked about with The Edge of Extinction, and even with talking like dominant wins like Boston Rob and Kim. Does the fact that Mike is going to win and win all the challenges and win the way that he does that help or hurt the rewatch?
I don't subscribe to the idea that like winning challenges means that the rest of the strategy of the season is negated, because, you know, someone wins a challenge, sure, but then you have to play around that. There's still strategy of other people trying to figure out, you know, how to outplay it. And I also just think, like, you know, for me, rewatching the season, knowing the winner, it doesn't really matter to me. I knew most, like a lot of the seasons, like when I first watched the show, already knowing the winners, because it's more about the journey than it is actually about, you know, the end result. In my opinion, I don't really think it matters that much.
Jenny, how about for you?
I also think it doesn't ruin it for me. If anything, like I go into it where I'm going to pay more attention to what else is happening, because I know what the result of the challenge is. So I'm going to be even more tuned in to the conversations that are happening. And I found that was why I noticed all of the other things that Mike was doing besides winning challenges, and how he, you know, even down to that final four where he, you know, tells Carolyn that he's going to send her to fire and tells her to go like sneakily practice fire. Like he played the game even when he was safe. And so I found that it gave me like more of an appreciation for his game, where I was not just, I had to focus on more than just the challenges because there was no surprises.
Okay. This is a new feature we're going to do. I will give you my updated rankings of the 6 seasons I have watched and where we are at right now. And so I will say that Worlds Apart clocks in at number 2 in my season rankings of the 6 seasons I have watched so far. I have The Edge of Extinction as number 1. Still, I know that is probably a hot take of these supposed worst 6 seasons of Survivor that we have watched, but I feel like that I enjoyed every episode of The Edge of Extinction, and I felt like that there was almost no part where I didn't love the outcome. I feel like that there was almost no point during that season where I'm like, okay, well, I'm bored. I'm bored. There's nothing interesting going on. Like, there was always something going on in The Edge of Extinction. Worlds Apart has, you know, a lot of stuff. I really feel like that segment of the season, really from episode 6 through almost all the way to the finale, I think there's like lots of interesting stuff that happens all the way through. Third for me is Survivor One World. Fourth is The Island of the Idols. Fifth is Redemption Island for me. And I feel like that the worst season I have watched in 2021 is Survivor Thailand. And those are the Rob Cesternino season rankings as I've watched 6 seasons in 6 weeks.
I think those are very fair rankings.
Yeah, Edge of Extinction kind of rules, in my opinion. You guys already kind of talked about it last week, but I'm a big fan. I'm going to be interested to see how, like, a lot of the earlier seasons, like, Thailand is bottom for you, and I'm sure a lot of it is just because of how unlikable people are, but I'm going to be curious to see
the pacing is slow too.
Yeah. Where the older seasons kind of rank, because I think the pacing in a lot of the, like in Australia is pretty slow, you know? So I'm going to be interested to see how we even compare like Australia to like a season like this. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Okay. Let's take a look at the poll results from the Rob is a Podcast listeners. Of course, every week we poll the audience and ask them different things about the season, and the tabulator Kurt Clark puts it all together. Who is the season's MVP? Jenny, you have an idea?
It's got to be Mike.
Got to be Mike. How high? What percentage of the audience?
62%.
62. No, that's a little too high.
42%.
Okay.
155,000%.
Yeah. Mama C is in second place, 24%. 9% said Shireen. What one-time player would you like to see come back and play in a future season, Phil?
Mama C, baby!
Mama C. Yeah, baby! 40% of the audience. Jenny, who do you think was 2?
I'm going to go with Jen.
Jen, yeah. 13.9. Rodney and Hot Rod was 13.2. Which cast member on this list made you pause and say, wait, who's that? There was a winner had 38%.
Kim, I'd say maybe. Kim or Joaquin.
Mine is Kelly Remington.
Kelly Remington was two. Lindsay Cascadon, number one.
Yeah. I just felt like Lindsay was more memorable as a character to me, even though Kelly goes further.
I think that she had more to do here, but I guess people do not remember her. Kim, I think, has the neutral box.
Yeah.
She has that. I think people remember that. A unique name. Okay. Most underrated player of the season.
I'm gonna say Tyler just because I feel like he doesn't get edited.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just feel like he gets lost in the edit, and I didn't remember how even keel he was and how smart he was and stuff. And I just felt like I didn't remember how good he was. So I feel like maybe he's underrated.
He's second. 20% said Tyler. Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna say Haley or Mama C?
Mama C, baby. 27%.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Who got the Kelly Wentworth Award for best pre-merge boot?
They're gonna give it to Vince, right? I mean, I'd say Joaquin.
I'm gonna say Joaquin.
You're sleeping on the man who got an Entertainment Weekly article today, Max Dawson.
Oh, Max.
38%.
Oh, my God. How did I forget Max? I feel so bad now.
Okay. All right. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rank the tribe name Merica?
1.
What are we ranking it on?
How much do you like it?
Like, I like to laugh at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it got 2 because I think that it maybe got some people ranking it just because it's memorable. Very because good. It's so stupid.
Yeah. It got a 3, which was higher than I would have thought. I would have taken the under.
Okay.
Out of the 40 seasons, where would you rank the winner, Mike Holloway, on a scale of 1 to 40?
I'm going to be probably 32. I'd say.
One is the 20. Best winner. 40 would be the worst winner.
Right. I'm going to say 20. Maybe 20. 21, 22, around there.
Jenny, what do you
think? I'm going to go 28.
Yeah, the audience said 26.8.
So close.
Yeah, that Mike is a really hard one to gauge because he does have a lot of the leadership you would like to see from somebody who is a Survivor player, but he also then has this impulsive streak which hurts him in the game, and he does have good social relationships with people, but then also makes people really mad at certain points in the game. So he's a very high variance player. It would be interesting to see what he would be like if he came back, if he would be able to, like Tony did, not a second time, but after coming back on his third time, sort of make some refinements in his game. Could he get better? Be interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you feel like this season is placed too low or just right? Okay.
I personally feel like it's too low.
Too low.
And I think that the audience is also going to say too low.
Okay. What do you think, Phil?
I used to be this is way too low. Now I think it's a few more spots higher, but I'd say we're around the right territory.
It's not super, super low compared to where I think that it should be, but I do think that most people feel like there are other seasons that haven't been rewatched yet that should be above this season. Yeah. So which is why I think it's going to be too low.
46. It's not watching paint dry. Sorry.
Yeah. 46% of the audience said that it was just right.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Okay. Then second was too low and only 15% said it was too high.
I think I ranked it at 32 on my personal rankings. So.
Okay. All right. It's probably a bottom 10 season. You know, the thing is, when we go back and we watch these seasons, even the bad seasons are still have something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah,
you know, if you love Survivor, you love Survivor. Even the seasons that
this one has a lot of memorable characters, I think, at least. We'll give it that, for better or worse.
Yeah. They tried something. It was memorable. You're not going to forget these people. I mean, some of them, but for the most part, like, it was an interesting story. Survivor went for it. And there we go. We had a question also, like, why can't Survivor make a good season in Nicaragua?
I feel like I don't really like the location. I'm not going to lie. Like, I just feel like we just see a lot of dead trees, and it's just like a lot of, I don't know. Not a big fan.
Okay. All right. It's time for me to tell you what we're going to talk about next week.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yes. Okay. All right. The 34th best season of Survivor next week. We will talk about. Oh my God, I just spoiled it. It's Survivor Nicaragua.
Oh!
I'm so mad at myself. I gave it away. I gave it away. Yes, Survivor Nicaragua.
South Pacific keep skating by week by week. That's insane. But Nicaragua is a lot of fun. I'd say it's a good.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to go back and take a look at. You think South Pacific should be really low?
Pretty terrible, besides, like, you know, Sophie, I guess. But
I think we still have a couple of weeks. I think we still have a couple of weeks before we get back to South Pacific. But we'll see. Yeah. Okay. All right. Next Wednesday night, time for me to push the boulder back up the mountain and start another rewatch of a Survivor season soon. I'll be watching Survivor Nicaragua. But we have another outstanding panel. Next Wednesday night, we will be catching up with AJ Norris and sequester star Jacob Jones next week on the podcast. So that'll be a fun panel.
Great panel.
To talk about Survivor Nicaragua next Wednesday night. Of course, we are not done yet talking about Survivor Worlds Apart. I still have a ton of feedback questions left to get to. We will talk about them this weekend in our patron feedback show with the great Jessica Frey, coming up this weekend, and very excited about that. You can listen in on that conversation when you become a patron at robswebsite.com/patron. Let's tell you a little bit about what's coming up next on Rob Has a Podcast. I got a lot of great stuff that's already posted right now. Lex Vandenberg joined us on the latest Talking with T-Bird. And if you haven't listened to that, check out a great interview with Lex talking about everything from Survivor Africa. And then also T-Bird outdid herself to catch up with some other important figures in Lex's life. You don't want to miss this one on the latest Talking with T-Bird. How about that? Look at this. Ian Terry joined me to talk about the film Smart House. Phil, have you watched Smart House and rated it on Letterboxd?
I have not seen Smart House yet, although, you know, I want to watch it before I listen to the podcast, so I'm highly anticipating watching
it. It's on Disney Plus. Was it good? It was interesting. It was interesting. Jenny, have you seen this movie?
No.
Ian Terry said, I want to do one podcast. I want a podcast about the movie Smart House, a Disney Channel original movie from 1999. So we did. That's up on robinswebsite.com if you want to.
You don't
check.
Say no to Ian Terry.
No, don't say no to Ian Terry. And then last night, I got together with Mike Bloom and Mary Krakowski, Frail Mary, and we talked about some of Jeff Probst's funniest moments of all time. We did talk about From Survivor Worlds Apart, where Shireen goes to her first tribal council after the swap. And she's like, oh, everybody's all fitting in good. And Jeff's like looking at her and she's like, oh, wait, did I say something weird? You had a weird reaction. He's like, no, is the Botox not working? That was on the list. Find out what is the funniest Jeff Probst moment of all time with Mike and Mary up on robisawebsite.com. And then it's Blue Collar versus Blue Collar, as Tough as Nails season 2 is back, baby. Myself and Mike Bloom and Jessica Lease will talk about the Savage Crew and Dirty Hands back at it in the Tough as Nails season premiere with special guests all season coming up on our Tough as Nails recap. That will be in your podcast feed on Thursday. Be on the lookout for that. And then Pirate Master last month, Phil and I went through all of Kid Nation. This month, we are going through everything. Pirate Master, four parts, matey, with Aaron Robertson. We will be going through chapter two, part two, with David Bloomberg. Find out why X marks the spot this weekend on Pirate Master. Okay. Of course, lots of great patron activities as well, including Patron Family Feud, coming up this Friday night in our patron group. And also we send out the video on Patreon. So check that out as well. Lots of great stuff coming up. RobHasAWebsite.com/patron for everything we have going on in our Patreon podcast feed, activities, and more. Okay. Thank you so much, Scott St. Pierre, for all of that. Oh, be sure to follow us on Instagram at RHAP Grams. We're putting out so much content about the shows on Instagram and also on Twitter at Rob Has a Podcast. Okay. All right. Jenny, what's coming up for you?
I don't know. Are you
twitching? No. You have your own Twitch, Jenny?
I do have my own Twitch. I haven't started streaming anything yet just because I feel like who has time to watch me when all of my amazing friends are also streaming. So I'm like a supporting character on many other people's Twitch streams. But yeah, I'm just hanging out and living life and getting through the pandemic the best that I can. Yeah. And enjoying finding out what the next best or worst season of Survivor.
Yes. Okay. Follow Jenny Autumn on Instagram if you want to see beautiful pictures of food.
Really? You think I post? Oh, it's all Phil T. Not Phil Thompson. I haven't eaten anything that Phil Thompson has made, but I'm sure that he's an excellent cook as well. But I do eat some good food that Phil T makes me, and I'm a mediocre Instagram follow, but please follow me anyway.
No, I like the quiz.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rob.
Yeah. So follow Jenny Autumn on social media. And Jenny, great to get to talk some Survivor as our resident Joe Anglim expert.
No.
You're retiring?
I never asked for that title in the first place, to be honest. Yes. And I'm definitely not, taking it at this point.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. And then the great Phil Thompson, he's at Listen Up Philip. Phil is rating movies over on Letterboxd. Phil, what are you watching these days?
I just watched the new Netflix film. Have you guys seen Malcolm and Marie yet? Have you heard of it? It's made by the guy who made Euphoria. It's not that good of a movie, but I highly recommend people watch it. It's very, very funny.
Okay. And what else, Phil? What else is going on?
Nothing much. I'm just kind of working on a few films right now, trying to edit some stuff, and kind of just sitting around, not doing anything.
Well, just for people who don't know, you're making films.
Yeah, I'm a film major at a school. I'm graduating soon, and I'm kind of just trying to figure out, how to make independent films. But I love reality TV because I get to use a different part of my brain. And it's so much fun to be able to talk about it with all you guys, and doing RHAP really makes me happy. So
Phil, when you're off,
sign that.
Yeah. When you're off, like being super successful and like on a junket somewhere, will you still remember us?
I'm going to be like, Rob who? No, yeah, of course. I'm going to be doing this as long as you want me,
Will you
Rob.
Email me and ask me to delete all your old podcasts because now they're embarrassing?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to have you keep up, keep the Kid Nation podcast because I think that is...
Yeah. By the way, if anybody wants to check out Phil and I and various guests going through all of Kid Nation, the 2007 CBS series, which featured children worlds apart from their parents, trying to create a new society, you can follow that. Go to robinswebsite.com/RHAP Rewind to subscribe to that. You'll also get our Pirate Master episodes that we're doing all every month. We're watching a new show on the RHAP Rewind. Those podcasts, we also posted them on YouTube if you want to look up any of our Kid Nation recaps on the YouTube. All right. Thank you so much for watching us. Of course, appreciate it when you subscribe to the podcast. robinswebsite.com/iTunes. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And it's hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Good thing, too. You're busy enough. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.